call the meeting to order. First of all, if I can ask everybody to, well, first of all, I want to say the events the past weekend in Paris are heartbreaking. The families, the neighborhoods, and the communities directly affected by this is unimaginable act of cowardly terrorism in our hearts and in our prayers. The town of Caledon stands with the people of Paris and the worldwide community in grief and sorrow. Let us pause for a moment of silence to honor those whose lives were tragically lost over this cowardly act. So if I can ask everybody to please rise, and we'll do a moment of silence today, and then we'll do the O Canada. Everybody can now join us in the camera, please. There's no summary of addendum items. So we now move on to the approval of the agenda, moved by Councillor Misipelli, second by Councillor Downey, that the agenda of November 17th, 2015, council meeting be approved. All in favor? Carried. Okay, is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest? I see none. We'll now start on the presentations. Ms. Tollett, do believe you're the first on the list.
Okay, good morning, everyone. So I will start the presentation today. I know there's a lot to cover today, several presentations, but we'll start off with our user fee review. So today in this presentation, I'm going to cover not only the fees review, we're going to also talk about recreation subsidy. We're going to talk about Bill 124 and our new fees that are being proposed for the 2016 budget and some fee changes. As part of the budget process, Finance was asked to do a review of the user fees and charges for all departments. This was not a small task, I would say. It took us several months to complete. We started off by looking at all the departments. However, we excluded library, parks, and recreation, as these departments are more subsidized than the other departments. However, I will discuss recreation in a further slide. The purpose of the fees review is basically to identify what are our fees. We haven't done a full fees review in quite some time. to provide a better understanding of what are the costs associated with our fees. And overall, after our review of the fees, we're trying to recommend covering at least the town's direct and indirect costs associated with those fees. At this time, we're not looking at allocating overhead costs, so overhead costs of support departments like human resources or corporate services or IT, simply because the price of the fees would outweigh the benefit of anybody actually using those fees. So over our review over the last couple months, we tried to identify what the current fee structure is with each department. Each fee was reviewed with the manager to discuss what are the hours associated with each fee, who works on each type of fee, and how many hours and time is devoted to each one to get the direct costs. And then we basically asked them what other costs are associated with that fee. Is there any copies, materials, advertising? What are the other direct costs related to those associated fees? Then we took the indirect costs, which is basically an allocation of the departmental budgets for training or memberships related to staffing, to get the overall direct and indirect costs for those fees. And then we compared that to what our current fee structure is. So our overall goal during this process was to at least cover our direct and indirect costs. Some of the fees are obviously decreasing in our review. Some are increasing. A majority of them are staying the same. So as the chart lists there, we're decreasing about 39 of our fees. 188 are actually going up, but 333 is staying the same. The overall impact to the budget that's been added is $300,000 of non-property tax revenue to the 2006 proposed operating budget. A full list of the fees is provided as part of the package today. You'll see it has the current fee, description of the fee, the 2015 fee, and the proposed 2016 fee. So recreation subsidy, this is a new concept that I'm introducing this year. So what does subsidy mean? Recreation is not generally full cost recovery from user fees. Recreation program costs are recovered from user fees and from property taxes. The property tax is being the subsidy part. The subsidy is used to remove some of the burden of the cost of the user fees so that people can take recreation programs. It's impossible to cover all costs to those user fees, because nobody would actually participate in the program, the cost would be too much. So the idea here in the 2015 budget is to approve a subsidy. So that subsidy would allow the department to be more responsible for their own budget. So in a given year, recreation can, if they have increases in expenses, they have three options in what they can do to keep within a subsidy. And that is to reduce expenses in other areas, look for efficiencies in their budget, or increase their fees. However, this will allow them flexibility so they don't have to increase all their fees, but they, as long as they maintain that approved subsidy, they can stay within that budget. So this chart, finance staff worked on in reviewing the recreation budget. Basically, staff dissected the recreation budget into these different components. So you'll see there's direct costs, indirect costs, which is an allocation, and then you see the total expenses and the net budget. And we basically divided the budget into the different functions within recreation. So we have aquatics, camps, concessions, fitness, arena and general programs, rentals, Calvin Day, and corporate events. Each one showing what the overall subsidy is per se. So if you look at the column on the left, I guess, the blue column, that is showing the overall budget for recreation. You'll see that the total revenue for the proposed 2016 budget is about $4.7 million. Total direct and indirect expenses within recreation is about $8.7 million. So the net budget or cost is $4 million. So recreation, from their fees that they charge for their programs, covers 54% of their expenses through user fees. However, there's still a subsidy, which is what I'm asking council to approve this year, of 46%. If we maintain that 46%, then the recreation budget added another $95,000 in non-property tax revenue to the 2016 budget in increasing some of their fees between 2 and 5%. Going forward, what recreation will have to do is maintain their budget at 46%. If in a given year they have a lot of growth and they can maintain that 46%, they would have to come back to council during the budget process to ask for an increase in that subsidy. But at this point, we're recommending the subsidy stay at 46%. And it's important to note, this also includes the unmet needs that are being proposed for recreation are included in these costs. Okay. We tried to take a look at other municipalities to see what their high level, what their recreation budget is showing versus expenses versus revenue. And this is just a list of some of the ones we looked at. Now, I'm aware that for the city of Guelph, they do have an actual recommended subsidy, but they have changed it over the years and they're relooking at it again this year, but they did have an actual approved subsidy quite a couple years ago. So Caledon, we're actually looking at staying at about 46%, which is on the low end of this range, but Town of Milton, I think, has some other things within recreation. I think they have a casino that's kind of driving some of their money. It's a little different than Caledon. However, if you look at some of the other ones, our subsidy would be somewhat there. Want a casino? The next part of our review was looking at the building fee. As per Bill 2124, building permit fees must be fully cost recoverable. So in this case, they have to cover not only their direct, indirect, but their overhead costs as well. So we looked at the allocation that we're putting into the building reserve and what our future outstanding work is related to building permit activities. We looked at any projects, capital projects that need to be benefited from the building department that should be funded from the building reserve fee. And then overhead costs, we looked at what the support costs are from corporate services, from IT, from human resources, from legal. What are all those support costs that are contributed to building? So this chart is showing the history of 2014 with the number of permits and then the number of permit revenues, just to get an idea of the average cost per permit, which is you'll see on line C. Line D is the cost calculated based on that review we did with departments. Same review that we did with other departments. How many hours are associated with each fee? How long does it take? Which staff are devoted to it? To figure out what the costs of the direct and indirect costs are associated with the fee. And then we applied an overhead cost as well to those fees. This is just the three fees that we're recommending to increase, just to show that under column C, or sorry, E, you can see that there's actually a loss related to each of these fees. The other fees associated with building, some were lower, some were on average, so we're not recommending an increase. These are the only three we're recommending an increase of just 5%. Now, this chart just shows the effect of that increase from one area. This is just looking at the residential component. So you'll see the different types of the fees there. You'll see our current fee structure per square meter. And then you see the proposed town increase for the 5% in that grayish column. And then we have five other comparables so you can see how they range from Halton, Milton, Brampton, Mississauga, and Kitchener. Milton's actually are quite considerably low, but they haven't increased their fees in quite some time. They're actually several years out of date, but they are looking at it for their 2016 budget as well. So if we actually increase our fees to the 5%, we're still within our range there, within our other comparables. So how does that translate to the budget? So this next slide is showing the projections, showing your 2015 budget, our proposed 2016 budget, and then projections, obviously, from 2017 to 20. We're obviously putting a lot of assumptions in this chart, so we're making assumptions for salaries and benefits of 2%. We're increasing corporate overhead by 2% just to see what our projection will be. So you'll see we have the expenses, then we have the total building revenue estimated, the annual contribution or annual surplus, that's the contribution into the reserve based on the previous slide. And then we have the funding that we would put in for certain capital projects to show the amount that would be actually being transferred to the reserve. And this slide is a continuation of the last. So this is showing the forecast of how the reserve would look like. If we increase the fees by the 5%, what the projections are showing from the previous slide and how that would feed into our reserve balance. So for 2015, our reserve balance was 3.3. Then you add some interest and then a contribution into reserve estimated for this year. Our ending reserve balance would be about $4 million, which represents about 1.5%. And then we project out from 2016 all the way to 2020 with several assumptions, of course, so we get up to approximately 2% by the end of the term. Now, our comparables there below, these are policies where they actually have an actual policy. For City of Brampton, it's not an actual policy. That's what their balance is versus expenses versus revenue in their reserve right now. However, we're recommending to change our policy from the 1 to 1.5 to 1.5 to 2. Then in future, if we ever have a year where we have less building activity, we can actually cover our expenses in our building department for up to 1 to 2 years, or 1.5 to 2 years. The next two slides just focuses on some of the new fees that we're bringing forward in the 2016 budget. There's just a couple in each department. In this one, similar to last year in 2015 when we looked at DAP, we looked at some of the fees that we can consolidate, so to save residents time and coming in twice for one permit. So under the permanent liquor license fee, that actually includes the inspection fee that they need to pay as well. So instead of coming back twice, for once for the application and once for the inspection, it's all incorporated into one fee there to save time for the residents. The overall impact that would be added to the budget here is about $46,140 of non-property tax revenue to the 2016 operating budget. This last slide I wanted to highlight just because this is a significant change in the way the fee structure is for public works. So I'm showing you the previous and then the new for fill permit and then for the fill of heavy truckloads in Gallatin use, road use. So we went from a kind of a range or scaled approach. Now we're going to more of a flat fee of $500 from the 100 to 200 cubic meters. And then anything after the 250, it would still be the $500 flat fee and then $2 for every cubic meter. Anything over the 10,000 cubic meter was addressed through that fill moratorium report that was done by Public Works back in the fall. Any revenue related to this is already included in that $300,000 that I mentioned earlier. It's no increase as much. This is part of that $300,000 that we added in the previous slide. And that concludes my presentation.
I have one question for you.
Just one.
Yeah, no, got great questions from Councillor DeBoer.
I think as a presentation, I got the answer to the first question, and that is the intent to increase the building fees by 5%, I guess, until we get to the point where we're covering the cost associated with it.
To you, Mayor Thompson. So the 5% was, when we looked at some of those, just those three fees in particular, we were showing a loss in the way they were being charged for those fees. So we estimated to increase them 5% to make sure we covered additional costs related to those fees and then made sure that our reserve balance going forward still supports our recommendation as well.
Okay. Because you're still predicting, even in 2020, you're still projecting, although it's projections, still a loss, correct? In the building budget forecast. Because your transfer, if I'm reading it right, the annual surplus transfer would still be a negative 248. It would go into there, but it would still be lower than...
Oh, correct. So 248 would still be going into the reserve, correct, but it's still a positive number. It's less than what we're... But again, this makes a lot of assumptions when you go that far out, but the first couple of years, it makes a little bit more sense how much is going in there. We still want to try to contribute to that reserve, but you don't want it to be a negative necessarily either.
And I think the important part, because this is one of the questions that we got the last time when we went to a 1.5%, I think we set it at 1.5% the last time, and one of the questions that a lot of people said was that we were setting at 1.5 to make up big DCs. I think the explanation has to come that the 1.5% is the amount that we predict will carry the building department over because the fees are collected at the start of a project, but you have expenses, inspections, and costs associated with that all the way through till the end. And that's the part that a lot of people, and until you explained it to me, you and Fu Wang explained to me what this all means, a lot of people didn't understand that. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we've got expenses going forward. Some cases, like Canadian Tire, we're probably 4 or 5 years down the road in having to pay for those expenses, but we've collected the money up front, correct? And the big projects, houses are probably a couple of years, and that's where the 2% come in. So I think with the increase, there has to be a good explanation as to why, because that was the question, one of the questions I got the last time. Wi-Fi advertising, I guess the advertising is good if you can get it to come up as part of that sign-in one, so you don't have to scroll through the accept. If you can get it to pop up and then an accept box right at the bottom of it instead of the long scroll, I think that would be worth getting $500 per ad for. Make things so much easier. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I got a couple more questions. Councilor Bedford.
Yes, two. First of all, the recreation subsidy. Can we go back to that sheet?
Sure.
Just want to clarify at the bottom where you talk about the 95.6 equals the subsidy. Is that correct?
Correct. Through Mayor Thompson, to maintain that 46%, recreation had to add that revenue into their budget, which they did.
Okay.
And they did that with a combination of adding some increases to their fees between 2 to 5%.
Okay. My other question may or may not be valid in the type of work that we do, but is it not possible for some fees, not all recreation, I don't think you could do it, but to actually track how much we pay, excuse me, to have a computer program that when you do that job, anybody that works on it, it goes into a tracking and you pay the actual reality of what it is that you're doing. Is that possible for municipalities?
At this point, we just track the how many times people use those fees and how many times they touch. We haven't done that review of how much it costs for each of those fees for recreation,
right?
Because they're more unique, like a business. They're looking at overall aquatics, overall camps, and overall concessions. And it would be a huge exercise, actually, to do that. But it's something I guess we can note for
Well, I don't think we could do it. Maybe we could in the future for recreation. I'm talking more about building, for example. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that when you come in for whatever it is you're coming in for, whoever touches that file takes a piece of it, and at the end, it could be a different fee for each person for the same kind of permit, depending on how difficult it is, depending on how much time we put into it?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, I think that would be a difficult exercise if you're wanting to scale the fee every time somebody comes in to be a different fee. And that you got to remember that fee that we're calculating is not just hours of the person's time.
Right.
Because there's also indirect costs and overhead costs that are not accounted for. So, for example, for recreation, we're not adding any overhead costs into there.
Right.
For building, we have to recover all the costs, including overhead. So I think that would be a huge exercise to do, and it's a little difficult to do on a regular basis. That's why we have a certain assigned fee.
Yeah, and I understand that. I'm just wondering with new technology if there's any way we can track that amount. Maybe in the future.
Not at this point, but I could certainly note it.
Okay, thanks.
For Wing?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, just to add to what Ms. Tollett mentioned, this is essentially the exercise that we went through. We don't do it every year. We do it every few years, and we take the average. What you're proposing would make it for the resident and business owner may make it more difficult because when they come in, they don't know with certainty what that cost is. If we're actually billing them based on actuals, if it takes an hour, and if we estimate it takes an hour and it takes 5 hours, when they come back, they're expecting to pay for an hour's work, and they're going to pay for five. So that's why we do this exercise every few years, and we take the average. So we went to every department. We asked them to identify for this application how many hours of work does it take on average. And now with this fee structure, it's published. Someone comes in, they know what the application fee is.
And I appreciate that, and I don't want to prolong the discussion, but I guess my point is if he comes in and he thinks it's going to take an hour and it takes five, we eat the four. So that's why I'm saying if we could track it, we wouldn't have to do that.
Yes, and through you, Mayor Thompson, that is a very good point. And in some cases, we could consider if it's a simple application versus a more advanced application, and I think there are some fees that consider that, and we can always look at that as we go into the future.
Okay. Councilor Innes.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. On the recreation subsidy, I do have a question with regards in particular to Caledon Day. So it was always my understanding that Caledon Day and the sponsorship and the donations pretty much cover the cost of the event. Mind you, I know that there are some indirect costs related to staffing, but I can't see it equaling that amount.
Sorry, so through you, Mayor Thompson, when we did this exercise, we're just applying an allocation of all the costs that are not direct costs within recreation and applying it just percentage-wise to each of these areas so that it's not exactly a true reflection.
So you shouldn't look at it that way. I'm just concerned because I don't want our residents to look at this and think that we're subsidizing Caledon Day by 60.8%.
So through you, Mayor Thompson, I think there was a report that went for about Caledon Day. Did it go yet? Yeah, I already went. Mm-hmm. And it spoke to the indirect costs, like the support costs, and I think it was around $30,000 or $35,000 for indirect costs. Again, this is just an allocation exercise.
Okay. I just wanted to point that out.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Misapelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you, Peggy. On the slide where you talk about the reserve fund, I just found it a little confusing. I understand what the intent is here, and I just wonder if there's a clearer way to present it. When we talk about our current policy is 1 to 1.5, and it's stated as a percent, I find that a little confusing. It's really 1 to 1.5 times. So if we stopped all development applications right now, we would have 1 to 1.5 years worth of projected development fees in the reserve that we would be able to fund in lieu of receiving those fees.
Correct.
I just find that a little bit, like I know, I had to sit and think about it for a bit, but I know what the intent is there, but when I see a percent sign there, like the 1 to 1.5% doesn't reflect on anything, but it's more, I look at it as 100 to 150 times. Or 1 to 1.5 times, whatever. I just want to make sure as we go through this budget process that when residents pick up our packages that they understand as clear as possible what we're getting at. So I don't know if there's a better way to put it, but I just found it a little confusing.
Okay. Mayor Thompson, I can change it to years, and I can certainly, we have a website for the 2016 budget that has all the information on there. I could put some wording in there for that.
Thank you very much.
That'd be a really good idea. Thank you for bringing that forward, Rob. Councillor McClure?
Yeah, okay. Everything looks pretty good, but on the building fee increase sheet, if you got that there, now we should be comparable to Brampton, but we're charging more on additions, a good bit more. Our proposed increase is $1,130 and Brampton is $964. Why wouldn't we try to be a little better than Brampton? We're a little north from Brampton, but we should.
So we were trying to follow the same consistency in the exercise. So we didn't want to go and put certain fees at certain percentages and certain fees at another percentage because basically it's a cost per square meter. So we just applied 5% across the board. And again, Mississauga and Brampton, they're probably reviewing their fees. This time of the year, this is when people actually review their fees to make sure they're still in line with their policy. But I think when we talked to our chief building official, he felt more comfortable in applying the straight percentage down below.
Okay, well, it's just, I think we should be a little lower. We're a little, nobody's going to come here if we're more than Brampton. That's just my thought.
Okay. I have no further questions, Ms. Tollett, so thank you very much.
One down.
Okay. So we'll call on our next victim, David Loveridge. Yeah. The clerk says you only have 10 minutes.
You I left can your speak tooth that fast, Mayor. I forgot my tooth. I apologize for Councillor Innes. Good morning, Council. Pleasure this morning to speak to you on the Caledon Stormwater Management Master Plan and our recommendations related to stormwater management for this year's budget. Why a stormwater management master plan? Staff and our consultants have been working on a stormwater management master plan now for almost 18 months. It started off with a large portion of the town of Caledon has been developed without the level of stormwater management that we expect from development today. With increased growth comes the increased development, and with that increased development comes roads and infrastructure that decreases the imperviousness of the lands, resulting in an increased volume and flow of water along our roads and through our stormwater management system into our creeks and into our and our ponds. That also follows logically that we have a decrease in natural cover. We have an increase in the amount of sediment that flows into our stormwater management system, both from the materials that we apply during winter maintenance, along with the dust and dirt through the construction process, plus what is produced by our residents themselves. So that increases the sediment and phosphorus that loads into our streams, into our ponds. And finally, an increase in erosion and flooding risk downstream of the urban areas. And with Caledon designed the way we are, in the sense of urban areas with a lot of open land, our streams and our ponds are important to us from an environmental perspective, and so therefore our stormwater management system is important. Opportunities exist today and into the future as we start to move forward with increased development within the town of Caledon to protect, restore, and improve our environmental conditions, and to ensure that the runoff and the stormwater that we produce is managed properly, both from a quantity perspective and a quality perspective. So the opportunities that are available to us as a town, first of all, is we want to remove sediment from our existing stormwater management ponds, and the consequence of being able to do that is to improve our stormwater management treatment. And I'll talk a little bit later about our stormwater management ponds and talk about quality and versus quality and quantity. We want to be able to convert some of our ponds that we have today from just a pure quantity, in other words, holding water and holding the sediment, to being able to deal with the quantity and quality aspects of it, which will increase the water treatment in those. And also, we want to start at the very beginning through our development standards, our engineering development standards, to start to design ponds and pretty well everything we do today, but design our ponds for quantity quality to start with, and to try and decrease the amount of ponds or the size of ponds we have through using low-impact design. And so our engineering standards that we're working on today will be part of that exercise. And finally, we need to clean or replace town-owned culverts and ditches to increase the conveyance of service runoff. So we need to start treating our stormwater management assets as a system versus individual assets. The objectives of the Stormwater Management Pond Master Plan Study, there were sort of two major aspects. One are the environmental objectives that we have, and second of all, there's objectives from a municipality or from the town's perspective. So environmentally, we're looking at, we want to improve water quality. I think we all agree that the water that we displace from our communities into our stormwater management system, we want them to be the surface water and the groundwater quality. We want to, first of all, meet the MOE guidelines, but we want to also meet our own guidelines of being good stewards. We want to minimize the sediment loading to our surface water and groundwater, so we want to decrease the amount of sediments that we're putting through our system into our ponds. We want to increase the water quality, and we want to protect our natural environment. From a municipal perspective, as I said earlier, we want to treat our stormwater management as a system. And so the last 18 months, from my staff's perspective, has been spent assessing the condition and the performance of our existing stormwater management infrastructure. That infrastructure includes our stormwater management facilities, which are our ponds, our storm sewer system, our driveway culverts, our cross culverts, which move water across roads and infrastructure, and our roadside ditches. And finally, we want to be able to develop a stormwater management strategy for the town that allows us to maintain all of that infrastructure, first of all, through a detailed and planned maintenance program, and secondly, through a planned capital program. So I've already mentioned the five different assets that are considered to be part of the stormwater management infrastructure system. And these are the systems that I'm going to speak of one by one as we go through this morning. So the biggest one and the most obvious for a lot of you council and for our residents is our stormwater management ponds. Currently within our six settlement areas, we have 60 stormwater management facilities. That's a huge number. And a lot of them, try and pick them out. Some that are pretty obvious, like the new ones in Southfield, so they're pretty obvious, the large ponds that are in there. But some of them are pretty small and out of the way, and you don't quite know, like the one in Caledon East here. You see it's kind of a gully, and you're not sure what it is, but it's actually a stormwater management pond. But the number of 60 is increasing daily as we speak. Every new development that comes in has one or two stormwater management facilities, and all of those stormwater management facilities eventually are transferred to the town, except for those that are in the condominium. So right now, for example, we have 17 new stormwater management facilities on the go, all of them which the town will eventually take control of and be responsible for. So depending on the origin or original design of these facilities, I spoke earlier, they either deal with quality, or quantity, I mean, or quality and quantity. And so I've broken out the ones that we have today. So the assumed ones are we're talking about the 60 ponds that we already own. So 39 of those are already quantity and quality ponds. And a lot of those are the newer ponds that are coming online. We have 12 that are quantity control only, and 9 which are quality, for a total of 60. Of the 17 that are under construction, you can see the change in the way our engineering standards are, what we're demanding of our contractors or developers today. All 17 that are under construction today are quantity and quality ponds. So stormwater facilities, where are we going? So from an operation and maintenance perspective, so I've broken each of these assets into two. So just a quick discussion on the O&M or the operation and maintenance, and then secondly on the capital work side of it. So for each of the stormwater management facilities that we have today, we have a legislated requirement to inspect these ponds on a regular basis. That includes, you know, the inspection of the ponds, weed control, vegetation management, grass cutting, cleaning of the inlets and outlets, sediment removal, and localized repairs. That's something that the town has not been doing effectively or on a regular basis since the inception of those 60 stormwater management ponds. So of those 60 today, we have a lot of work to do. Part of that is to ensure that we have an inspection every day with it to produce our MOE inspection certificate, which needs to be provided. We estimate right now that inspection program will be $420,000 a year on a go-forward basis and will increase as we start to bring new stormwater management facilities online. The second part of that is the capital program for stormwater management, and those are retrofitting existing facilities and also so retrofitting from bringing them from just a quantity to a quantity quality type pond, combined with the retrofits to make sure that the pond themselves still perform the functions that they need to, that they drain properly, that the outlets are working properly, that the pipes need to be replaced when they're replaced. And so and that also includes isolated large-scale sediment removal. So over a period of time of 20, 25 years, if there's no regular maintenance done on these ponds, some of the ponds can lose 25 to 50% of their capacity. So we have an obligation to go in and do that large-scale sediment removal, which is a large capital project, basically rebuilding the stormwater management pond from scratch. Right now we have, out of the 60, our consultants have identified 9 stormwater management ponds that require major capital works or renovations or rehabilitation over the next 5 to 10 years. And you can see the total cost of doing those 9 ponds is significant. It's almost $10 million in retrofits over the next 10 years. And so we've identified them there. They're in order from top to bottom. So in other words, Pond ID 16, the Marconi Court in Bolton. The retrofit there is over $3 million on that pond alone. And that's a conversion to quantity quality as well as the redesigning or getting the sediment out. So it's a big element. It's a big cost driver from a cost from a capital program perspective over time. The next biggest piece of the infrastructure pie when it comes to stormwater management is our storm sewer system. And a lot of us take that for granted in the sense of it's there and it just kind of hopefully it works. And again, this is another area. In 2015, we completed a Zoom camera survey of all of the Caledon stormwater sewer system. So what we ended up doing is going down through the catch basins with a special camera that can go left and right and look down the pipes and do an assessment of each of those pipes. That took quite a while. It took about 6 months over the 2015 year by a contractor to do that. The contractor themselves inspected 2,157 manhole structures and recorded the condition of almost 4,000 pipes with a total length of 155 kilometers of storm sewer. So that's an interesting fact that a lot of residents probably don't realize. 155 kilometers of storm sewers across the town, and increasing yearly with our new developments that come online. The minimum target, from my perspective, and I think hopefully when we start talking about service levels for public works, is that our storm sewer system is important to us, that the minimum condition should be good, right? We don't want to have anything below good. So right now, just based on the Zoom camera survey, we have 1.9 kilometers of sewers that are in desperate need of immediate remediation. 3.9 are rated poor, and 4.8 are in fair condition. So that's over 10.9 kilometers of storm sewer that needs attention in the very, very, very near term. In addition to that, we have 5,300 catch basins that have to be cleaned, flushed on a biannual basis, and at a cost of, you know, approximately, if we use staff in-house, about $30 for catch basin, it's a fair bit of work as well. So here we are, the capital works. Again, storm sewers don't last forever. They have a long life on them, but not an infinite life. Right now in our system, we run approximately about 70-year life on the stormwater system. Well, how old is Bolton? How old are parts of Bolton? We're in a process. We're in a position today of where we need to start taking a look at some of replacing some of our storm sewers. And in fact, in 2015, our first storm sewer replacements in quite a while were done on Bel Air New Love, and in fact, in the process of being done right now. Here gives you some idea of the immediate attention: poor, fair, and good. So, again, 10.9 kilometers or 10.8 kilometers of storm sewer that needs to be addressed in the short term. And particularly the 2 kilometers, that doesn't seem like a lot, but 2 kilometers of pipe underground underneath our road infrastructure that needs immediate attention says that we're looking at some major bills as we move forward for stormwater management. And you can see at the very bottom of that, the excellent no defects, the positive side of it, is the fact that our new infrastructure that's coming on board today, which is from our new development, is in really good shape. So we have 124 kilometers where no defects were found, and that reflects the fact that we have a lot of new infrastructure that is just put in. This is the case of if we take good care of this infrastructure as we move forward, hopefully we can extend the useful life of those assets so that we're not hit with a massive bill all at one time. Driveway culverts is another one of those little things out there that we don't think a lot about until all of a sudden our front yard floods or we have problems. And so we had our summer students this last year. We had our engineering summer students, 6 of them, spend the entire summer going around assessing the condition, measuring, identifying, and GISing all of our driveway culverts across the town. We had a competition as to how many we would have. I had guessed 9,000. I was wrong. We have 4,155 driveway culverts that were assessed and for their condition. Part of that is the driveway culverts are a major part of our drainage system. They connect the ditches together to ensure that water flows and infiltrates where it has to infiltrate. And so, therefore, ideally, we want those driveway culverts to be well-maintained, not crushed, not filled, and allow the water to flow. So a maximum of about 25% fillage, and so is about the maximum we want to go. In order to keep them at that level, we need a regular maintenance program, and that means going out and flushing those culverts on a regular basis, and that's the maintenance activity that the town needs to do to keep that system together. What we found during our survey this summer, and the students did an excellent job for us, is that we have an issue with our driveway culverts. Right now we have almost 1,200 driveway culverts that need to be replaced due to the fact that they're 50, 75% plus filled. And, you know, one antidote, the mayor came and talked to me a couple of months ago and said, David, we're having trouble on those 2 streets. The driveway culverts aren't working. We don't know what's going on. We checked the driveway culverts on both of those streets, and what were they, Mayor? All of them were over 75% filled. So we think that they're not important, but they are. They're the transmission process. They're the transmission tool for our water to drain effectively from our communities. And we're not just talking about most of our driveway culverts are not in the municipal areas or in the villages. They're out in the country themselves. So they also have a life to them. And so part of that is a capital program. We need to maintain them by flushing them, keeping them clear, keeping the ditches going, but we also need to replace them on a 20-year life cycle. So when you have as many 4,000 that we have on a 20-year life cycle, the math is fairly straightforward. We need to replace 200 and 225 of those. Starting in 2015, the Public Works crews out in the field has started a regular replacement of a number of those, but nowhere near the 225 number that we need to maintain our stock. So we figured that the recurring replacement is about $350,000 a year for those. The roadside ditches themselves, a lot of you comment to me about the condition of our ditches. It is also part of this system. Ditches aren't there just for the pretty bulrushes that grow there. Well, maybe they are, but anyway. Yeah. The ditches form a vital function for us in the country for our drainage and our stormwater management. And to be honest, we're behind the eight ball in our ditches. We have a lot of work to do. We started the process identifying all of the ditches, in other words, the width, the depth, the condition of them all. We got about 20%, 25% through with the summer students this year. They're going to continue that work in 2016, and we'll come back with an addition to the program for 2017. As a minimum, however, all of our ditches need to be cleaned and cut on a five-year cycle. So we maintain them by cutting grass and doing that on a regular basis, ideally on an annual basis. And we thank you, Council, for providing the tools that we need this year with our large brush cutters and all that. We have the ability now to do that. However, ditching is more than that. We need to dig them out. We need to put them back to their original design. We need to put stone and aggregate in the bottom to allow an effective drainage so that when water does flow through it, that we have the ability to manage it. So again, we'll be coming back in 2017 with the road ditch. We'll be back with the ditches in 17. Okay. Low impact design, I talked about that earlier. Mary's group and planning now deal with a lot of applications that come in for new developments, both in the rural areas and within our urban areas. And one of the areas that we need to seriously look at in Caledon is having a well-designed and implementable low-impact design program across the town. We're not a rich enough municipality that we can put urban infrastructure everywhere, and so therefore we want to maintain the rural look and feel and that rural infrastructure, which helps us with our low-impact design as we move forward. And so the more that we can absorb water right on the site without draining it away, the more land is available for development, the better our drainage is, the happier our residents are, and the least cost there is to the town of Caledon on a go-forward basis. The converse to that is if we go into the urban rural areas and we start adding infrastructure such as curbs and storm sewers and roads and all that kind of stuff, we'll have more runoff, we'll have more requirement for stormwater management, and we'll have more requirement for infrastructure maintenance that we could use the money better off somewhere else. So in a capital works perspective, our consultant is recommending that we go forward with a pilot project on LAD, but having said that, a lot of the new developments that Mary's crew is working on today have a variety of LAD efforts, and we'll be assessing those as we go forward. And then finally, on the LAD side, our engineering standards that we're working on today, which we'll be bringing forward for approval later this in 2016, will include a whole new set of engineering design standards based on low impact design. So when we took a look at the totality of what the infrastructure is and what it requires on a go forward basis and where we are today, the consultant came in and said, well, we got to do this, and this, and we got to do it now. And the reality is we can't afford to do all that now. But we do have a serious requirement, and what I told the consultant to do is go away. We have a serious requirement to do maintenance today. We need to do some catch-up on maintenance. And so the program that we developed and the proposal that we're bringing forward to council today is to spend the first or the next 5 years, first of all, building up our stormwater management system, but also spending our first 4 to 5 years on doing the operations and maintenance. That's cleaning our ditches. That's replacing our culverts. That's getting our system back up so it's in as good a condition as can. And then from year 5 to 15 and beyond, we're going to be targeting, our regular O&M program, our operations maintenance program, on top of that with targeted capital improvements. And we'll have to take a look at those as we get forward. But the reality right now is what's most important is that we get in and do the maintenance and the maintenance of our system as it sits today. This is a big chart, a lot of numbers. That's because I love numbers. I love spreadsheets, don't I, Peggy? Yeah. Anyway, the reality is all of this is nice. We tried to break it into two sides, which is capital requirements on the left in blue and operations and maintenance in green in the middle. The bottom line is the two blocks on the bottom. We have a total capital requirement over the next 15 years of about $12 million, as recommended by our consultants. We have a almost $21 million requirement over the next 15 years in operations and maintenance. And again, that's the whole system whatsoever. So we're talking a total of about $33 million over 15 years, or about $2 million a year in steady state. I'm going to pass it over to Hillary to speak to you about the stormwater management funding options.
Good morning. There are three general funding mechanisms we can use to fund our stormwater management program. The first is using a general tax levy. So this is similar to what we do now, and that would include the costs of funding stormwater management with our general municipal needs that are funded through the annual property tax levy. Alternatively, we can establish a special tax levy, which would be a separate tax levy that is dedicated for just stormwater management, and it could show up as a separate line on property tax bills to be transparent to the taxpayer as to the amount of money that we are using to fund stormwater management. The third alternative is to use a stormwater user fee. Now, this can be established as either a flat fee or a tiered fee, and it can be added to either property tax bills or the water bill. Each of these methods has different advantages and disadvantages. The general and special tax levy would be based on the assessed value of a property, just like our existing property taxes. A stormwater user fee can be either a flat fee or a set of tiered fees based on the size of the property or the impervious area of the property. Administratively, both tax levy options have either zero or minimal costs, while the implementation and ongoing costs associated with a stormwater user fee are substantially higher. Implementing a tiered fee requires gathering additional information on each property or making changes to existing billing systems. This would add substantial administration costs to the program. Most municipalities fund their stormwater management costs through the general tax levy, similar to what we've historically done. That includes municipalities such as Halton Hills, Milton, Orangeville. But some are using the stormwater user fee. The cities of Kitchener, Waterloo, and Mississauga have all created tiered user fees that they're now including on their water bills.
So in conclusion, for the presentation this morning, there was a couple messages that I wanted to be able to convey to you this morning. First of all, Caledon has a significant investment in stormwater management infrastructure. A lot of us don't associate a number of the elements to it, but we have a significant investment that is the responsibility of the town to maintain and to ensure its long-term availability to the residents on Caledon. To date, it's not been a priority area for Public Works, but as we move forward and as we grow, it's absolutely a priority area. Town is mandated by legislation to complete regular inspections and maintenance on this infrastructure. This is not something that we've done on a regular basis, and it's something that we need to get our act together and make sure that we meet that obligation. Regular maintenance will enhance a town's environment, will reduce localized flooding, and improve the quality and the quantity of the control of our stormwater management runoff. And we only have to have another storm like we had a number of years ago that highlights the issues when water goes astray. Water does more damage than almost any other element in the environment. So as such, staff is recommending to council that you look at implementing a stormwater management levy to be directed to the maintenance and repairs of this critical infrastructure. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I have a full board here, Mr. Leverage. So you
should I sit down, Mayor?
Yeah. Bottom line is everybody's on. Chair. So we're going to start with Councillor Groves.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. I don't have any questions, David, but just a couple of comments. First of all, thank you for bringing this forward. I know in Bolton, in the industrial area of Bolton, for many, many years, we've had difficulties in there with everything, the water draining properly, and especially because of the soil conditions that we have in Bolton. It's clay. The water isn't moving. The ponds become, and the culverts and the ditches, they're overgrown, and water isn't going anywhere. And we've had significant impacts on properties in Bolton. So I'm glad to see that you're bringing this forward and that there will be an annual maintenance program. Homeowners have experienced some damages to their properties in downtown Bolton because of the rainfall. We've had some heavy rainfalls this year, and that has to do with the catch basins, I guess. So I think it is, I've always been on the side of an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. It's less expensive, and ongoing maintenance, I think, is very, very important. We've had a pond at King and Station Road that we've had issues with. That's a mechanical pond. We've had silt going, and it was blocking it, and the water isn't flowing. And so really glad to see that you're bringing this forward. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for recognizing the need and the importance of doing this program. It is expensive, but I'm assuming, or I'm guessing, that had we have a plan like this in place where regular maintenance was being done, we probably wouldn't have incurred, because I looked at some of those numbers you're showing, especially in the Marconi Port area, it's over $3 million. Mm-hmm. That's a significant amount of money. $10 million in these, looking after these ponds, is a lot of money. Yeah. The other comment I want to make is the storms. We went from a 50-year storm to, I guess it's a 500 or a regional storms is how TRCA has classified those storms now. So, you know, that's a huge, huge impact on our culverts, our ditches, and our ponds. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. The first question is around the idea of conversion. Is the conversion a nice to do, or is that becoming a requirement now?
Right now it's a nice to do, but I think if we went into a major rehabilitation, I think it's a must do. Is Jeff here? I'm not sure. I asked Jeff to come up, but right now, it's a nice to do for us. There's no legislation, I think, that says that we have to convert to a quantity quality. But I think, as you notice, almost everything we've been doing lately is a quantity and quality, and the reasons for that is to ensure that we're not putting water into our streams and into our ponds, into our environment that we don't want. And so the ability of those ponds to handle that and to filter the water and to filter them out so that what leaves is good water back into the environment, it makes sense. I guess if push comes to shove, what's most important is that we have the ability to handle the quality of the water and that we don't flood areas. And I think, you know, those will be decisions when we start getting into the capital program in year 5 to 10. Where we're going to have to make some tough decisions, whether can we afford $3 million to totally rehabilitate the Marconi Pond, for example, or whether do we just want to rehabilitate it back to its regular state as a quantity-only pond. But I think we'll have to take a look at it one by one as we get forward.
But, well, to use that one then, to stay with that one, that one's a quantity pond?
Quantity-only today.
So yeah. Does it then fully drain?
It drains, possibly. It drains today. Does it drain as well as when it was designed, whatever it was, 20, 25 years ago? The answer is no. We have done no maintenance on the Marconi Pond in the 20, 25 years that it's been in place. It probably has, you know, 50% of its original capacity, and so that's an issue. So now we're into a major rehabilitation, and that major rehabilitation, truly from the consultant's perspective, is due today. We're saying that we're going to delay it another 5 years. We'll do some maintenance on it over the next 5 years. But when we go in to do it, it'll be a major rehabilitation. And when we go there, then does it make sense to do a full quantity quality conversion?
Okay. And I guess we could talk about what's all involved in it, and that might be something out of today. Because
yeah.
might not be something. But now you look at Cranston, and I'm thinking that's the dry hole that had to go in as part of the subdivision. But I think the only time I ever seen water in there was when somebody was trying to pump water from their backyard, and it ended up coming up into that creek.
Yeah, and so the question with the through you, Mayor Thompson, but the question with that, Councillor, is that was built as a quantity pond. It's supposed to be holding water. There's some reasons, I think, behind the fact that it's not holding water the way it was designed or built, and that's an issue that we need to take a look at for that specific pond. So it was designed, and it's not doing what it was supposed to do, and we need to figure out why.
Well, and I always figured it made a lot more sense for it not to hold water, especially here. If it went into the ground, essentially, the intent is to get the water into the ground. The ground's the best place to clean it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's interesting. It's not a surprise, because I think we've had the discussion before, and I know people in the industry that have always talked about when you started cleaning these things, you don't know what's in the bottom of them.
You don't know what's in the bottom of them.
As far as cleaning and getting rid of the material that you haul out of them, do you want to explain what that's all involved?
So through you, Mayor Thompson, so we've already started to take steps towards that. The region has the same issue. We have the same issue. Where do you put your pond? Let's just say pond scum. It's not the word we're not going to use. But our pond, what we take out of the ponds. Right now up in the Quarry Road, we've de-licensed half of the pit at Quarry Road up in Yard 2. And part of that area, I've asked Mike, the manager of engineering, to set up a specific area there for both our ditching and our ditchings that we take out, plus what we would take out of the stormwater management pond to put in that area. And so that's where we'll be taking that material.
Is it going to be managed and then
correct.
Just re...
We're going to manage it, and along with the region. We've had preliminary discussions with the region to help us manage the ditchings and all that to put back into good use.
So we're going to use that site then for both the region of Peel ponds that are under their jurisdiction as well as our own?
We're having that discussion with the region. They're looking for a place to put that. So
that will require a C of A then, will it?
I'm not sure. It's not contaminated waste, so it's not considered contaminated from a chemical perspective. And so, anyway, we're going to follow that through.
Okay. When we talk about funding options, stormwater management ponds, why don't you use the way that they fund municipal drains and it goes back to the benefiting homeowners? I went through a couple of years ago when the canal, the Holland Marsh Canal was was cleaned out and everybody paid a certain amount into it. It was put onto the tax bill for the people that were in the area if they couldn't come up with the immediate amount of money. And actually we had people in Caledon that were contributing to the project of the canal rebuild. And using that, especially in the urban area, because the storm drains are very, you know exactly where the water's collecting from, and having the work done and doing it the same way, and you assess the cost of doing it onto a special levy within the taxes, and you collect it that way. Can we do it that way, or we operate under something totally different when we do it under the municipal drains and drainage act? I guess that's under the Drainage Act.
So I'll sort of in a higher level I'll answer that question, then I can ask Peggy to jump in if she could for a second. So the stormwater management system as a whole today affects all of the residents of Caledon. So in your urban areas and your villages, you have your storm sewers, you have your catch basins, you have your stormwater management ponds, both in the urban area and in the rural area and commercial areas. You have your ditches, you have your cross culverts, you have your driveway culverts in the urban areas. So in every part of Caledon, the stormwater management infrastructure touches every resident of Caledon. There's nobody within this area, within the town, that's not affected by stormwater management. So it's something, in my view, and again, that's my personal opinion, that's an overarching fee that applies to all residents. Just like we don't ask someone who has a bigger road to pay more of the road versus a smaller road. The road network is a network. It's a system that serves all of the residents. And I think that, you know, from my opinion to you, or my proposal to you, is that it's a system that affects every resident, and therefore all residents should pay for it. is it possible to do it the other one? And I can pass that over to Peggy and go from there.
Ms. Tollett?
Through you, Mayor Thompson. So, no, sorry, David, you answered the question exactly how I would answer it. The other way is that it was more under the Drainage Act for those specific areas, but what David's actually proposing, or Public Works is proposing, is a town-wide, no different than for roads or anything else. It's a town-wide ask for stormwater management for all the different aspects of stormwater, not just specifically one area or one type.
Okay, but I think we need to have a longer discussion or a bigger discussion around it, because it does end up being largely the costliest portion of the program is what is in support of the urban areas. A lot of people in the rural area manage runoff within their own property. Ditches are equally as important to the roads as they are to the residents in the area to transmit the water, because we use the ditches to allow the water to escape from underneath the roads to keep them from heaving. We always talk about the roads being, and we can use the number, 50% of the traffic isn't our traffic.
Yeah.
It's probably even higher than that, depending on where you are. And that's where the principle of the Drainage Act, where it ends up the benefiting residents pay for it. I had people in the north end of Caledon that had to come up, I think their bill was like $5 or $6, just because they were within the watershed, and the engineer, because they were upstream, there was a certain benefit as they went down. In that case, a lot of people complained about one of the benefits to the county of Simcoe was the fact that the road was moved farther away. Well, the road wasn't moved, the canal was moved farther away from the road. So there was a less liability. But that liability impact was actually assessed to it, so that the county of Simcoe actually paid a certain portion of the canal works that had to happen. So everybody benefits from it, and you can take into account the fact that there's a benefit to the town generally to the benefit of the road. So I think that the cost, I think if it was on the assessment too, it would open the eyes to a lot of the people who, for example, wash their cars in the laneways, which are contributing to the phosphorus. Although we're getting less and less phosphorus soaps, it still contributes to the phosphorus soaps. It contributes to the oil and the gas that comes off your laneway into the ditch. If you've got an old car, you might think it's kind of nice because you've got a few black spots on your laneway. Well, that eventually makes it to the storm drain, makes it to the pond. Somebody in rural Caledon that basically has a ditch in front of them is contributing to the cleanup of that pond, because the people in the area didn't realize that there was an impact and a benefit to them. So I think there's a number of things here. I don't think it's just as clean cut as doing it just that way.
So through you, Mayor Thompson, so we brought to you a number of options for billing, and we brought to you a recommendation. I think we brought the three options forward to you because we realize that there are options for funding the stormwater management. I think the central point that I go back to is, the first is, we have a large stormwater infrastructure that we need to maintain. We need the funds in place. We need to figure out how to go there. And if that's a complicated system of drainage, where people pay for drainage based on their area or their land size or whatever, there's different options that are available. I've even heard of options where if you have a driveway that's not paved in a rural area and it has a lot of a low impact characteristics to it, you would pay less on your storm fee than someone who has a fully paved curved driveway. And there's lots of options that are available. We're trying to bring forward something that says we have big infrastructure, we have big costs, we need somehow to be able to fund it, and we'll leave that recommendation.
Sorry. Yeah, don't take it out of the microphone, take it out on us. I don't disagree that we've got a large infrastructure, and I've always questioned why we're not doing more over the years. And why we haven't done more. I think we've got to continue to do it, or we've got to get started at it. I think it's, we've got to come up with a way to deal with it, but we also got to do it in a way that it ends up being fair.
Fair and equitable.
Because a lot of rural Caledon, we got 80% of Caledon is rural countryside. So essentially all we have in the 80% of Caledon is open ditches, crossroad culverts, and laneway culverts.
Yeah.
Laneway culverts, we have a lot of gravel laneways, and acreage that we don't put our rainwater from our roofs into the storm drains. The runoff in the ditches are what comes off the road. The ditches are getting full because we're trying to keep the roads passable to the people, so it's the sand and the salt that comes off of everything else that reduces the depth of the ditches.
Yeah,
so there's a lot more to it, and to tax, to add something to the 80% of the people where they're probably having less of an impact on this whole part of the project, especially considering down the road, the cost is only going to get bigger because somebody came up with the idea that we should develop 30,000 acres of lands within the south part of Caledon. So, you know, like we might think that we got to find money somewhere to address the problem today, but if we set the formula in place today, that will be something a lot harder to look at and change and make more fair down the road.
And I think staff understands that, Councillor, and I think we're going to have this conversation a number of times over the next year or two. We could have the same argument when we start to have the discussion over public transit, which we're going to bring forward in 2016. So there, I think there'll be a number of those kind of funding formula conversations as we move forward.
And I think the one thing that when you look at a Drainage Act type model, and maybe we don't do it under the Drainage Act, but we say this is how we're going to deal with it in Caledon, is that there's a public meeting ahead of time saying this is the work that we're doing, these are all the people that are impacted, this is why we're doing the work. So think about how you manage your runoff water. If you want to help and make it so that we don't have to come and do this again sooner, buy yourself a rain barrel.
Yeah.
Find some way to use water within your neighborhood.
Okay, Nick, I'm cutting you off. The one real quick thing I will say, you say when Councillor DeBoer did ask for clarification, is it good, right, the right thing to do versus is it necessary? I will tell you, AMO staff have been informing Roma through climate change, it's coming.
It's coming. Yeah.
And if it isn't, it's going to be here by next year. There's going to be a lot of talk coming 2016 about this. Guess what? There's no money, so we might as well get on with it and develop a plan.
Yeah.
Councillor Shaughnessy, you're next.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I can't believe Nick and I are actually going to finally agree on something. And I don't mean to beat you up. but what he articulated is exactly where I see a very unfair circumstances coming up. I agree with him, and I'll make it short and sweet, that the culverts and the ditching on the side of the roads out in the country is about road maintenance, not about what's coming off my neighbor's dirt driveway or the farm field or whatever. We pretty well manage all our own stuff. I know my residents would be really upset thinking that they had to pay for somebody's stormwater pond. As we know, development doesn't pay, and this, it pays for the new stuff going in, but it doesn't pay for the maintenance in the future. I know Mississauga looked at, well, it's about too much concrete and not enough permeable surface for the water to go back down to the water table. That's the problem. And they looked at roof sizes and sizes of houses, etc. But that's strictly in an urban area. But I would be very upset and wouldn't support billing my rural people for stormwater management that is really caused by high development with a lot of concrete. I think that would. So you have down here possibly water bills. Well, most water goes into residential areas. Maybe that's a possibility. Most of us out in the country are on our own wells. So that might be a fair way. I just say we have to create something that's fair, like Nick said, to the 80% who aren't really contributing to our stormwater management problem. So that was shorter. Sorry. That was all my comments. Sorry, but I just think we need to look at it a little bit more in depth and from a balanced point of view. Okay? Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Shaughnessy. Councillor Befford.
Thank you very much. I guess I look at this as the good news is the staff did a great job of reviewing what's there. The bad news is the staff did a really good job of reviewing because it's left us with an issue that we've really got to deal with. The good news, too, is, you know, as you drive, I'm going to use two examples. Canadian Tire in the east, you see their stormwater management plan. It's massive. It's huge. You go over to the Thomas Farm on the west end of the town, you see the same thing on a smaller scale. So people are well aware of what has to happen. I guess a couple of things. That focuses people to understand that we're working hard at stormwater management. And at the same time, during the recent election, this was a huge issue in terms of infrastructure, and it's my understanding that there's going to be money forthcoming for infrastructure projects. So how do we handle that? Are we going to take stormwater management as our priority if there's money freed up for us to apply for? Have we thought that through? And what does that do to our decision with respect to whether it be added onto the water bill or anything else? Have you had any discussions regarding that, Dave?
Through you, Mayor Thompson. Councillor Baffert, today we're focusing on stormwater management, so I'll lead to the answer to your question quickly. We're focusing on stormwater management. Stormwater management is one of the major infrastructure systems that we have in place. We have a road network which has $140 million in deferred maintenance right now. We have a bridge infrastructure system where we have 40 to 44 bridges that are with an infrastructure zero, with a condition index of zero. We're going to come back to this council later, either later this month or the first meeting in December, and we're going to talk to you about infrastructure, the condition of our assets as a whole. So the answer to your question is, would stormwater management be an infrastructure system that we could apply for grant funding? I think the answer is yes. To date, we've been applying for roads and bridges and infrastructure, and we've been successful on a number of occasions, like Boston Mills in 2015. The rebuild of Boston Mills in 2015 was a result of infrastructure funding that we received. So simple answer is yes, but stormwater is one of a number of major systems, including our town facilities, including our fleet, that are in dire needs.
Understood. So we've got to make a decision.
Got to make some tough decisions.
Just on stormwater management, not to drill down to local, but there are two outstanding studies being done, one in Alton and one in Calvin Village. Where does that fit in what you've talked to us about this morning?
So through you, Mayor Thompson, so both of those studies will feed into the sense of what is that local microsystem, what microsystem looks like as a whole of the whole system. So Caledon Village, for example, we've had a number of discussions, Councillor, I think you know, in the last year and a half. Caledon, where we have a problem in the village of Caledon is the result of the whole system coming from upstream. Right. And so we need to take a look at that whole system and then how does it fit into the bigger picture. And the same with the Alton flood study that we're going to take a look at. Now that we have new development, and yes, we've designed Thomas Farm around with their own infrastructure system for stormwater, but we need to take a look at the whole system within Alton. How does it flood? How does it drain? How does it affect the pond? And again, that study to be done. Status of those two projects, the specifications have been written. We're doing a final review. They'll be out to tender hopefully before Christmas.
Okay, thanks. I guess the big thing now is we've got to review this as a council and decide where we're going to go with your recommendations. One item on the ditch waste, and that is taking it over to yard two. There's a finite capacity there. In other words, it's not going to last us very long. Could we have, or have we had discussions with the aggregate industry as to, working with them as to where there may be some locations where we could?
No.
This is clean fill. Fairly clean fill.
No. Contaminated.
It is cleaner than fill that's environmentally unsensitive.
No.
Through you, Mayor Thompson, so the issue of ditch waste and and all of that, we are going to have to deal with in as a detailed plan, and we'll come up with a solution that works. In the short term for our ditch waste, which is the cuttings and all that, we're putting that over in the quarry now. When we start getting into cleaning out our ponds and that, we may end up having a contractor who deals with that and disposes of it in accordance with the MOE guidelines. So.
Will they use part of that from that pit in the in mulching and creating mulch?
I think we'll come back with a plan, Councillor,
overall
how we're going to deal with all of that.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
You're really wanting a target put on your head, aren't you? Councillor Downey?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Thompson. Thanks for your presentation. I'm wondering, within the scope of this work, if there's opportunity to discuss and partner with the CDC for stormwater management. They're doing extensive research and work. I'm not suggesting that would ease our responsibility to stormwater management, but that, by aligning our best practices, we may get further ahead with them in terms of the health of our stormwater management and so on.
Through you, Mayor Thompson, Councillor Downey, so we work closely now with CVC and TRCA, and in fact, one of the pond rehabilitations that we're doing right now, the Loring Court Pond in Bolton, is funded almost entirely, funded entirely by the TRCA. So Jeff and his staff work on a regular basis with both those organizations, and we work hand in hand to find the best solution for us for stormwater. And Mary's crew, Mary's staff, on all of our development applications for site plan, we have a lot of interaction with TRCA and CVC on both of those. So the answer is yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Councillor Mizzapelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. I just want to put a cautionary note out. I know there's been, and I don't want to create a rural-urban rift here, but I would caution, I'm not against exploring that tiered billing system, and I would ask that we look at Mississauga, Kitchener, and Waterloo to see how that plays out. Certainly Mississauga, it's a very uniform landscape, so it would be equitable by the very fact that the landscape is very similar. Caledon is very unique in that we have two very distinct landscapes, the urban and the rural. And so although I understand the rationale, I would see this as being the only example where we separate out, as a municipality, what we fund. There's a study, and there could be a study in Ward 1, 2, or any other ward than 5 that residents in Bolton through their taxes fund, and vice versa. So I'm cautious about separating this, because I believe if I look at the very end, it's proposed to be a 1% on the town side tax increase. So if we break that out, it will be less for some and then more for urban taxpayers. So I've always looked at all the work that we do, the town of Caledon, for the town of Caledon. And so this is concerning for me. I'm good with continuing to look at it, but I would like to see data on those other communities that do tiered billing and what that looks like.
So through you, Mayor Thompson, answer that. I think what we did is we brought through a proposal for how we would fund a stormwater management levy. And one of the things that we thought maybe at this point was important, given the size of this expenditure over time, was that we had a separate levy that was easily identifiable, that the money was specifically put away for that use, in other words, into a stormwater reserve, and used for that. Ordinarily, in a number of residents, I think Hillary's shown, or another municipalities, Hillary has shown us that maintaining the stormwater management infrastructure is no different than maintaining the bridge infrastructure, no different than maintaining the road infrastructure. It's a tax levy type hit that could quite easily have come forward as we now need a stormwater management maintenance and repair program that looks like 1% a year, increasing to 4% over the next 4 years. This isn't a 1% for 1 year. It's one this year, one next year, one the year after, till we get to a steady state of $2.2 million a year. And so it's a big hit item for the municipality to start taking a look at this, and we thought it might be better to be able to take it outside the tax, you know, the tax levy portion, so it's easily identifiable and people know exactly what it's being used for. The simple option we could have come forward and said this is just part of our normal budget submission and we want another $500,000 a year over the next 4 years for stormwater management, or not want, but we need. So just to serve into that argument, the presentation today was to say it should be a separate, you know, we're recommending maybe a separate levy that's outside that's easily identifiable and trackable. So.
Yeah, and I have no problem with separating it out to identify it, but you make the good point. You know, it's no different really than our bridges, our road capital projects, and those are taken from a common pool, which is the town of Caledon in its entirety. So just going through the presentation, private stormwater management ponds, are they exclusively and only in condominium-type developments? I know there's some large ones attributed to industrial development. Yeah. Are those all town-owned?
No. So Canadian Tire is owned by Canadian Tire, maintained by Canadian Tire, recapitalized by Canadian Tire. That's an example. And the small ones in the condominium developments are owned by the residents of that development. There's been a couple small mixes over time that we're still sorting out. Black Horse Village is an example of one where we had some issues as to who's responsible for what. But if it's a private condominium development that has a stormwater management pond, that's part of the condo corporation's responsibility.
Okay. And in those examples, would we require them to have the same level of maintenance and repair that we would have on ours? Because obviously, if it's different, the effect could spill out beyond the boundaries of that property.
So they have the same requirement to inspect and maintain and to report to MOE on a regular basis, or to have the reports available to MOE on a regular basis. And I think under the Condominium Act, I think they have the requirement to include that as one of their assets and to plan for their maintenance under their condominium plan. So.
Okay. All right. Where you list the stormwater ponds to be rehabbed, I notice number 17 is the pond on the east side of Albion Vaughan Road, which is in Vaughan. Does the town own that and
that's
bear responsibility
correct.
For it?
That's that pond on that side, on the east side of Albion Vaughan, that little piece of land with the stormwater management pond is owned by the town of Caledon.
Okay.
So it's our foothold into Vaughan.
Okay. When you talk about storm sewers and the assessment you did with the cameras, and now you're going to incorporate that into a work plan where you're going to address particularly the ones that are in need of immediate attention in poor condition, does that communicate with our road assessment so that we kind of meld those two together and roll out capital programs that address the road and underneath the road at the same time?
So that's correct. The answer is yes. 2016 work plan is to take those storm sewers that have been identified in poor and needing immediate attention. We're now going to go through a detailed camera inspection of all of those. So the zoom allows you to take and look in from the end and look out about 100 yards. 100 meters down. We don't get to see all of it. So now what we're going to do is we're going to do a detailed assessment of all of those ones that we think are in emergent need. And then we'll identify what programs required or what works required, whether it's lining, detailed cleaning, minor repair, or replacement. And then we'll coordinate that, obviously, with the road program. And you've already seen prime example with Bel Air New Love, where we had to delay our road works due to both sanitary and storm sewer replacements. So
right.
That's part of our program.
Okay. Some of the stormwater infrastructure, particularly ditches, culverts, things like that, are on regional roads. Does the Region Appeal have a similar program that would mesh with ours, that we would have the same operation, maintenance, repair level, be it a town or a regional asset?
I'm not sure on the answer on that. I would assume that they do, but I can follow up and get back to you on that. So.
Okay.
See if they do.
Yeah, I think they do. But
and that was it for myself. Thank you very much, David.
Okay, sir. Councilor McClure.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Thompson. Just a question, a couple of comments. On the driveway culverts we were talking about, what percentage of them are plastic and which percentage are galvanized?
I don't have the exact number. The majority right now are metal. They're galvanized. As we replace them now, we're going with the new high-tech ones, the plastic ones, so that hopefully will have a longer than 20-year life.
No, they should outlast.
It should last forever.
Years. Yeah.
And so you'll see all of the ones we've replaced now to date pretty well are being replaced with the plastic ones. And again, good investment. Easier to clean and last longer.
And so the same price, I think, aren't they?
Same price, pretty much.
Yeah, and just at what percentage, at what size do they stop making plastic culverts? Because the big ones are all metal.
Sure. 450, according to Jeff.
Four feet, yeah.
450 millimeters, so 18 inches.
18 inches, yeah. Well, a lot of the driveway culverts are 2 feet. They're plastic.
Sure, it's the interior diameter. I think they look a lot bigger from the outside because they're about that thick, but I don't think.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And just another comment. Our buddies on Credit View Road there, they got a backhoe beside the road in that culvert. They better not be blocking the road off or I'll be taking a stick to them. Because it was blocked off all summer.
So they've started to replace the two end pieces. The road is, they've said to date that the road will be open during that process. So they're going to start this week to replace the two end sections.
Yeah, well, they're working at it right now, and they're blocking half the road off, and Hydro doing the other half. So it's.
So you can put your stick away, Councillor. I'll take care of that later today.
I'll do that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The one thing, that's all the questions now, but the one thing I would say is a recommendation going forward. If I was the public listening to this conversation, say, well, isn't that what my taxes are about? Mm-hmm. I think what we need to do is message out of this is similar to what Milton went through, is we're committing to stormwater management. That's roadside culverts, that's ditches. Low impact development already exists in a lot of communities like Caledon Village, parts of Cheltenham, doesn't matter what it is with, you know, ditches and culverts, it's just, it needs to be enhanced a little bit more. But the reality is that's what it is. We all have skin in the game. So I think the big thing is we just need to put this money aside, and that's our commitment going forward. I would recommend that's how we do it. Everybody has skin in the game. The big thing is that I don't know how you do it. Like, I know a lot of condos, like in Mayfield West, as I was speaking with Ms. Hall here, you know, they all drain into the pond, so that's very easy to capture. It's those small little ones that they have to do it through the condo fees. We'll just have to alter that. But, I mean, we all have, every one of us in this municipality has skin in the game. Now we know what our costs, true costs are. We need to know what we need to commit for maintenance going forward. So I congratulate you on that.
Thank you, Mayor.
But I would recommend that tax levy or special tax levy, it just, you know, people need to know. The taxpayer will know that this is what's committed to go forward on. And we're committed to it, and it's not going to change. It's entrenched from here on in. I would recommend that.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Now, listen, we do have Sarah Peckford, but if everybody, can we be back here at 10 after 11, please? We've got 5 minutes. You can get a coffee or use the washroom break, and we'll be back here in 5 minutes. And the council's back into session, and I will now call on Sarah Peckford.
Good morning, Mayor and members of Council. I'm here to speak to the Council work plan. Specifically, I just want to highlight some of the proposed or the work plan actions that have been proposed in the 2016 budget or some of the ones that are considered low-cost or no-cost items. So the presentation is structured one slide per priority area, and we'll go through it. And if you have any particular specific questions, I can take those at that time, or you can, you'll hear more in the treasurer's presentation later today. So the first priority area is broadband internet. And this slide really covers three specific items. The first initiative is really to support our involvement in the Southwestern Integrated Fiber Technology Initiative. The second relates to the expansion of public Wi-Fi at a number of town facilities. And the third is related to the public sector network connection for the Margaret Dunn Library in order to improve internet access for internal and external users. So again, just for those who are just coming in, this presentation is really just highlighting actions within the Council work plan that are being proposed within the 2016 budget. There are also some items within this presentation that are more low cost, no cost. And I should note that this is not an exhaustive list. So this presentation doesn't include, obviously, all the 2016 items within the work plan, just a handful of those that we wanted to preview for you. So communications These two items, I believe, came up at the special council meeting in October. The first one is reviewing the town's advertising spend and exploring other communication channels that are accessible to all residents within Caledon. The second one is about improving the town's website and its usability. That's related to increasing the ability of the search function and a whole host of other items to make that website more robust. The third item relates to customer service, which obviously we spent a lot of time on within the work plan. And there are two items here, and these are really meant to help review our processes and to help us try to move forward in more of a strategic manner when it comes to customer service. The first item is an external customer service survey and a benchmarking exercise. And the second one is the creation of a staff customer service team within Town Hall. And these two items, again, they arose from, they were really seen as municipal best practices when doing research on customer service amongst other small municipalities. The next priority area is growth, and I won't get into these items in too much detail, but the first one is related to the white belt visioning, which is in process, which I'm sure obviously most of you know about. And the second one is related to the Bolton residential expansion study. For infrastructure, there's four items here. I believe you just heard from the Director of Public Works on the stormwater management plan. We also have an item within the work plan related to the start of construction for the Bolton Fire Hall. Reducing facility energy usage. This is an ongoing initiative that the Energy and Environment team addresses as part of our Green Energy Act requirements. And lastly, it's to increase the 2016-2018 tax funding for capital projects. So protection of rural environment, again, this relates to the white belt visioning, which is in process. For recreation, these two items, one obviously relates to the Mayfield West Community Center design and construction, and the other one relates to trailway improvements. And this came up a number of times within the special council meetings and is an item within the council work plan. And second, last but not last, is the priority area related to seniors housing. And again, there's two items. The first one is the proposed dedicated staff resource for the implementation of the adults 55 plus strategic plan. And the second one is about developing land use policies for housing that address all age groups. And I believe that's part of the official plan review. Budget item. And lastly, is the tourism and sports priority area. One of the items within the 2016 proposed budget is an initiative related to better wayfinding strategies for town recreational amenities. And the second one there relates to the new staff position, which is in process, which is the grants and partnerships. And I believe the new staff position's title is called Specialist Corporate Partnerships. So that's really it. We just wanted to give you a flavor of some of the items that are being proposed in the 2016 budget that relate back to the work plan. And from there, I can take any questions.
Thank you. And I do have some questions. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much. This is great. Couple of questions. We have the white belt visioning in both the growth area and the protection of rural environment. I'm trying, you know, they seem really opposing to me. You're either protecting the rural environment doesn't mean building it up and making it commercial and transports and all that sort of stuff, which might be part of the white belt visioning. So I think we're lacking, and I know a number of the councillors in the past have talked about what about the other 80% of Caledon. To me, that's about protecting and enhancing that environment. So I just want to, you know, be here and say, you know, white belt vision ain't great, but I want, I'd like to see the other 80% of Caledon included in that. And then the other part of it, which is one of the big issues in Ward 1, is it actually aggregate and how it affects the environment. We're talking about the pits. We're talking about recycling, et cetera. And I think that's all part of protecting the rural environment. So I think, I don't know, I see white belt sitting in the growth area and protection of rural environment being something else. But that's my opinion for today. Thank you.
All I was going to say, my visioning on it is how does it all dovetail together? Everything has to connect, right? It's building those connections.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor. Unless you put those two items together, then we're not actually going to see that whole picture. It's sort of, you can't look at, you know, the 15% and say you're protecting rural environment if you're not including the other 80, 85%, depending on what that number. Just, it's about balance, right? So, yeah. Thank you.
I have no further questions. It's off the board now, so... Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. You did a great job. Now I will call on Ms. Tollett, or Peggy Tollett, Heather Hare, and Fu Wing Wong.
As council, I think we're gonna I think we're gonna be probably an hour. Yeah. So I think we can go through for an hour. We've had a break. I think we're good. Everybody's good. Yep. Let's drive on.
Sorry about that.
Do you
want to
do this and take questions in installments, or do you want to wait till the end, or how do you want to do this? The end?
We're saying end.
Right to the end? The clerk says she wants to drag this out, so this is cool.
Okay, sorry. I wasn't prepared to go right away, so let me just go. Yes, an hour? No, that's fine. I'll get started. Okay, I just wanted to make sure the other staff there was required for the presentation here as well. Okay. All right, so 2016 budget. So I would say this year for the 2016 budget was certainly a collaborated effort between all the departments. You'll see that throughout the presentation there's a lot of different things from each of the departments, and we tried to consider all the departments in this budget and make sure that requests of anything that's priority is addressed in here. And then also trying to meet the council work plan and address that into the budget as well. So, timeline. So right now we're at November 17th, and of course we've had a lot of presentations this morning, but you know, I saved the best to last. Yeah, it's just a lot. The next presentation will be December 1st. So this one's going to be a little different than we've had in the past. Before, we would have the public information meeting, and it would be myself and Mr. Wong that would do a presentation to the public and then all questions. The way we're going to handle this one a little differently this year is we're going to treat it more like a PIM, an open house. So at the beginning of the meeting, we'll have each director in the atrium or in the cafeteria with two boards that will represent their ask for 2016 and their budget pressures for 2016, and then also their statistical information. In combination with that, then the public can ask any general questions to each of the directors, and each director will also have a financial analyst with them to take questions and answers and replies from the public and from council. Keep it a more open forum for the December 1st meeting so that we can address everybody's concerns, because sometimes in an open forum into the council chambers, people are not wanting to ask questions. So this way, we're keeping it like an open house at the beginning, and then after that open house, we would come into the council chambers to do this presentation that I'm doing for you today. On December 15th, we will have each director doing their departmental presentation. That would be a combination talking about their 2016 pressures for their budget, their requests for unmet needs, and their request for capital for 2016. And then in 2016, we'll have, you know, Christmas in there, and then we'll go into 2016. Then we're going to start the deliberations for the budget. Can't speak today. We're starting with the new structure for general governance, so we're going to do committee structure. We're going to start with the general committee and then go into the council chambers after the week after to do the actual approval of the budget. But on the 12th is where I would want everybody's recommendations or motions so that we can bring forward everything at that committee level, and all changes will be done at that point to see what our final tax rate will be. And then on the 19th is actually just the approval and finalization of the budget or the ratification of the budget for what the approved fee increase or the budget increase will be. So the agenda today is several different things. So I'm going to start off with the fast facts, and then Mr. Wong will be doing the budget pressures. Then I will come back to you for assessment growth and for the proposed 2016 operating budget. Heather Hare will come in and do the proposed 2016 capital budget and the 10-year capital projections, and then I will close with the annual debt repayment limit and then the overview for the budget. So this slide is showing you, based on 2015, on the split of where your dollar goes. So this is a loonie, and your dollar for tax dollars based on 2015 budget, this is how it's split. So 42 cents going to public works, 16 cents obviously to fire emergency services, and so on and so on. 2 cents is for a combination of human resources, economic development, development approval, planning and policy, and corporate accounts. But that's where $1 goes for the budget. This next slide is important because it's important to understand that with the budget, we have three factors. One is not only the town's portion of the taxes, but we also have regional budget and then school boards. This chart showing the 2015 split for the taxes levied and how much is going towards town is 37% and 32% for regional and 31% for school boards. And throughout my presentation, I will always tell you what the town impact is, but at the very end, I want to focus on the overall rate and what we're estimating it to be. So this next slide is showing you in a different perspective. It's looking at just the residential and farm, how the tax dollar is split, versus the next slide, which is showing commercial industrial. So for town portion of taxes, under residential, it's more under the town than it is for commercial industrial. For commercial industrial, a majority of the taxes that are contributed for taxes on that area goes to the school board. So the next few slides will show you a view of the town's assets. Now, this represents the historical value, not the replacement value. So we have over $541 million worth of assets. However, this is based on historical value. So we have $286 million worth of roads. We have $116 million worth of buildings and building improvements. We have $59 million in land and land improvements. $21 million in bridges, culverts, and stormwater. $20 million in vehicles. $9.6 million in machinery and equipment. $9 million in furniture and fixtures. And then, of course, that's work in progress, projects that are in progress right now. This next slide is one I want to kind of focus your attention on because it's important to understand this slide. So what this is actually telling you, the orange on that slide, or I guess it looks yellow on this side, is the remaining value of those assets based on the historical value. The gray is how much we've actually depreciated or amortized over the years. The more gray means the majority of your assets are fully depreciated. So what this is telling you is a lot of our assets, based on historical values, is fully depreciated almost, and we have to start putting more money into our tax credit program in order to address this. Because a lot of these assets, like I said, this is historical value, we need the replacement cost of that, which would be, you know, 3-4 times more. I'll now turn it over to Mr. Wong for budget pressures.
Thank you. Like Ms. Tollett, I was expecting to present after lunch. So, I'll just,
so you're hungry is what you're telling us.
Okay. So before we... Okay, so before we get into the budget details of the proposed 2016 budget, I'd like to go over some of the high-level pressures that are that the town faces in 2016. So under inflation, like most residents and businesses, the town is also a consumer of goods and is impacted by inflation. Inflation is measured by the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, which is a rolling 12-month comparison of the cost for a standard basket of goods. So the basket of goods includes food, clothing, utilities, and so on. CPI for Canada ranged between 1 and 1.3% from June to September. And that was CPI Canada all items. For CPI Toronto, because Caledon is within the Greater Toronto Hamilton area, CPI for Toronto ranged from 1.1 to 1.8% for those same months, with the trend August and September at about 1.4%. So in the past, we've heard that the town should peg tax increases to CPI. As shown on the slide, CPI changes from month to month because it is a rolling 12-month average, and also the town faces other budget pressures beyond CPI. For example, and I'll go through the other pressures on this slide and the next slide, under salaries and staffing, the 2015 is a contract renewal year for both fire and CUPE. Provisions have been made in the 2016 budget for union and non-union increases. The non-union increases are listed as cost of living adjustments. Council has also requested that staff investigate and implement a retention strategy. The proposed budget includes moving the town's compensation from the 50th percentile to the 60th percentile within our comparator group, with the hopes of retaining some of our best staff. Staff retention and with the hopes of attracting talented staff. Now, staff retention is important because it actually helps us retain a wealth of institutional knowledge, history, and background around issues and decisions by the town and within the region. Also under salaries and staffing is the issue of the impact of the 2015 staffing that was included in the budget for half the year. We were requested to add the new headcount in the 2015 budget for only half a year. So basically the other half of the year to make a full 12-month budget needs to be added and included in the 2016 budget. We also have proposed staffing in 2016. So the senior management team is proposing additional staff in 2016 related to growth initiatives to implement the council work plan and for the Parks and Recreation Master Plan. Another pressure that the town faces is growth. So as we have growth, we have incremental equipment, snow clearing equipment, parks and rec equipment that we have to purchase. I also talked about under salaries and staffing and incremental staff related to growth. So without the additional people and equipment to service the growth, service levels may decrease. So if you think of an example is if you have a 1,000 square foot house and it takes you half a day to clean it. If you move to a 4,000 square foot house and if you don't have more people to clean it, it may take you four times as long. So that's what we mean by impacting service levels if you don't keep up the equipment and staffing related to growth. So also you'll see in the 10-year forecast section of the budget, you'll see additional facilities. So this is more for the future. As we open more facilities, the town will face additional pressure to staff those facilities, so rec staff for some of those facilities and library staff. Also within the growth section is actually planning for future growth. So the proposed budget includes planning studies like the official plan review that is important to properly plan for residential employment growth within the town. So other pressures that the town faces are capital infrastructure investment pressures. So as shown on the previous slides or previous section, the town has just over $500 million worth of capital infrastructure valued at historical cost. Tax-funded tax dollars are required to repair, maintain, and replace that infrastructure. The town also must fund its portion of growth-related or development charge projects, because, as you've heard many times, growth doesn't pay for growth, and the Development Charges Act does a lot of times does not allow the town to fully charge or fully fund growth-related projects with just development charges. Development charges are collected from developers. So the town's 2014 DC study identified $523 million of capital infrastructure required to support growth over the next 10 years. Out of the $523 million, 63% or $331 million is proposed to be DC funded or funded from or collected from developers to fund those projects. The remaining 37% or $192 million basically comes from tax dollars to fund growth-related projects. So this is new rec centers, a new fire station, and so on. That works out to be close to $20 million a year of tax funding or non-DC funding that the town has to come up with in order to pay for growth-related infrastructure alone. Coupled that with the need to repair and replace our aging infrastructure, you can see that we have a huge issue to fund and to tackle in the 2016 and future budgets. So in 2015, council actually approved a resolution that brought us, that basically says by the end of this council term, 2018, we get closer to a target of $20 million of tax funding. And you'll see later on in this presentation, we are proposing that. But what we're proposing in 2016 has to continue in 17 and 18 in order for us to meet the $20 million target. The proposed budget also includes new initiatives such as townwide high-speed internet service. So this has been the subject of a couple of council reports this year, and the town has joined the Southwestern Integrated Fiber Technology, or SWIFT, initiative. The goal of SWIFT is to partner with other levels of government and the private sector for the build-out of fiber and so that high-speed internet services can be provided throughout the town, especially the rural areas. So each partner would contribute towards the capital build-out, and the town's portion, what we're projecting, is to be about $300,000, which is about a 0.6% increase in the tax rate. And like the stormwater management presentation we saw earlier, what we have draft proposed so far is a special tax levy to fund that. This would be a one-time, but we would show it on the tax bill as a separate levy each year. So, I briefly mentioned it, what other pressures that the town faces is what was presented earlier this morning, the stormwater management program, and that was following the study that was commissioned by the Public Works Department. And we also have the continuance of the enhanced road program, where the town spends about $4.1 million each year on a shave and pave program to enhance and extend the life of roads, and that also delays the costly total reconstruction of the same roads. It is anticipated that the $4.1 million program, which was started in 2014, will be funded through the issuance of debt, I believe, till about 2018, at which point, if we continue down the road of increasing our tax-funded capital program, we should have sufficient funds to fund that $4.1 million internally. On the issue of debt, as I mentioned earlier, we are proposing to issue debt for the enhanced road program. The proposed 2016 issuance is related to the 2014 program. So we finished the 2014 program, I believe, this year, and we are going out to issue the debt to pay for that next year. And the Caledon Equestrian Park is also completed. Our standard is that we issue debt 1 year after we complete the project. So the town's cost of the $11.7 million project was $1.7 million, and we are planning on that one, because it's only $1.7 million, we are proposing that we issue internal debt for that, and we'll just pay ourselves back over the period of time. I believe it's 20 years. And it just makes more sense to do that for $1.7 million instead of going through the region on a $1.7 million issuance. The estimated incremental impact of the proposed debt for 2016 is about $600,000. So that's to pay for the interest and principal. So what we have done is over 2015, we actually started phasing half of that in. So in the 2015 budget, we have $300,000 of the $600,000, and the other $300,000 we're proposing to put in 2016. So that actually lessens the impact of the debt, because every 1% increase is about $520,000. So the last point in terms of budget pressures, and this is actually a reduction or a negative pressure, or it helps reduce the pressures, is assessment growth and user fees. So as the town grows, as we get more properties added onto the tax roll, we get incremental tax revenue. And from that incremental tax revenue, it helps offset some of the budget pressures. And as Ms. Tollett presented earlier, some of the user fees, some of the new fees and fee increases proposed earlier this morning helps offset some of the tax increases. However, some of the issues that we also face in terms of a pressure is non-residential assessment growth is sort of hampered right now due to the GTA West corridor. Also, we have seen a trend in terms of declining planning and engineering revenues. So that those are items that have been factored into our 2016 budget. So this summarizes some of the pressures that staff have considered in developing the proposed 2016 budget that maintains service levels, improves service levels and customer service in some areas, and continues down the path of investing in the town's aging infrastructure. If there are no questions, I'll turn the presentation over to Ms. Tollett.
I do have one question, but the person isn't here, so we'll just carry on.
Okay, so assessment growth. This year, as the town grows, we have new businesses and new houses that get added onto the tax roll, however, and revenues collected from year to year. But we start off with a subdivision. So at that point, we're collecting taxes on just the land portion. And then the house gets built. That could take impact 3 years to assess that house before we see any of the money. So in the meantime, you're actually maintain the roads for those areas, you're supporting those growth areas, but you haven't received the full impact of that assessment growth. It could take up to that 3 years to get it from building permit stage to the end of impact, assessing it correctly to the full value of what the health is worth. So that's important to know that when we're going through the budget process, and you'll see our assessment growth projections going forward as well. And then another thing to note is we actually do get three supplementary billings a year that adds assessment growth or money into the town, and that is actually the trend for the last couple of years from MPAC. So we work really good with our building department and our development planning and approval department to look at the projections that are out there for building permits. As the building permits get added on, we actually take those building permits. So if it was 2013, then we're going to see that money in 2016. So we always project out 3 years. And that's the maximum actually we use as our trend. So what this chart is showing you is the purple color is actually the residential permits and revenue that are associated with assessment growth. And the blue is the non-res. And this is making certain assumptions, of course, and the assumptions that the GTA area that's locked down now in the corridor will be released, and then we'll see some assessment growth in the 2017 to 2020. And then also we're also seeing MW2 when that comes on board. 3 years later, we'll see that money in 2020 and 21. This projection is just another way of showing the actual split, because we do have a certain rule that we follow of how much of assessment growth goes to capital and how much goes to operating. In 2016, it's $1 million worth of assessment growth. That number is the number you'll see throughout the budget. It's not going to change. That's the number we're projecting for now to the end of the year. So we won't have multiple revisions of that number. That $1 million is being split right now between $500,000 to capital and $500,000 going towards the operating budget. And then going forward, you can see the splits, how much is capital is the lighted green, and then the red is the operating allocation. So, 2016 budget, we have to start with 2015. 2015, when one is finally approved, was at $75.7 million. And that's how much we have for revenues, and of course, that's how much we have expenses. It has to be a balanced budget. I've shown this chart in a different way. So the revenue is showing it by the different types of revenue, and you can see that majority of it comes from tax revenue, $52 million of it. And then in the expense side, I'm just showing you by department of all the different departments and how much the total expenses are. So one of the first things we have to start with the 2016 budget, is what was approved in 2015 that affects 2016. These are unavoidable budget increases. So in the 2015 budget, we had started the phasing of the debt payments for principal and interest for the enhanced road program and for the Caledon Equestrian Park. So that $300,000 was added in 2015, and then you'll have the other $300,000 there for 2016. That debt payment, I just want to make sure you're aware of, is just for the road enhancement program from 2014 and the Caledon Equestrian Park. You will still have to add more debt principal interest payments for the road enhancement program for 2015, when that is completed hopefully next year. So I will have additional budget requests in 2017 for more phasing of principal and interest debt payments. If we can continue that $4.1 million per year, I have to start adding those debt payments. Okay. The other thing this is including is in 2015, which I think Mr. Wong already explained, that we had the annualization of some of those staff positions. So $300,000 was said to allocate that to capital in 2015, which we did, but then now you have the impact of that annualization of those staff members in 2016. And then another position was approved in 2015 that affects your budget for 2016. Small impact in 15, of course, but then the full annualization of that specialized corporate partnership position is 150, which is reflected there. Overall, we're starting off our 2016 budget base with $754,000 of increases. This next slide shows the unavoidable budget decreases. So in the 2015 budget, we have several things that are one-time. And as those one-time things come off, they get removed in the 2016 budget, and this is the full list. There was, of course, one-time needs for the furniture and computers for new staff. There was the one-time need the rural numbering project and also the fire master plan. Those are one-time needs, so they get removed the following year. When we approved the LED project, it was said that we were going to reduce electricity savings and also maintenance costs, and that's reflected in here. The overall reductions or decreases are $369,000, but the net result is still $385,000 that got added into 2016, and that was almost a 1% increase. So that's how we started off our 16 budget. So in the budget, we start off with our expenses. So we had some minor increases for mandatory, just some legislative requirements under parks for about $20,000. Employee compensation is approximately $1.2 million. That includes COLA for $1.7 for staff, and then full-time, part-time, all staff. That also includes estimated costs for negotiations for our QP and fire negotiations. This includes grid movements as well for staff. This includes, as part of human resources retention strategy, includes money in there for the retention strategy to move us from the 50th percentile to the 60th percentile. And this also includes some restructuring of department costs. Inflationary, we have $675,000 inflationary. In 2015, we actually increased insurance. However, it was not enough. In 2015, you'll see when we bring forward our year-end variance report, we have about $250,000 of a deficit for insurance, which we're trying to address in 2016. So 2016, we're adding another 20% increase for insurance costs for all departments. So that's part of that inflationary number. This also includes some inflationary number for memberships for staff, operating costs, some contracted services, postage, and maintenance for vehicles. Utilities, we review that yearly. We look at the three-year rolling average for utilities. So we have about $169,000 increase for utilities. This includes natural gas at 7% increase, electricity at 6% increase, and water at 7% increase. Those are what the ratios that staff use when developing their budget. However, we still look at the overall average in the last 3 years in each of the areas, and that's the recommended increase in that area. And again, this year, I still tried to squeeze departments out for some efficiencies. Not as much as last year, of course, but I still was able to get about $408,000 out of the departments. We looked at printing costs, operating costs, office supplies, anywhere where we can trim the budget. And overall, all the departments came through with about $408,000 reductions. So our total expenses is $1.6 million of increased expenses. So some of the proposed 2016 budget revenue. So this increase for revenue for $260,000, this is coming from increased usage of our rec programs, increased usage in any of our concessions or our user fees. But another one that's included in here is our increase in our interest revenue for investments. So that's included in here. And then we also have some offset. We have seen still another decline in engineering fees, and that affects public works and affects development approval. But it's being offset by some increases in other areas. Overall, it's still another $260,000 that we've been adding to the revenue budget. And then as I discussed earlier this morning, we have some new revenue new fees for $46,000 that's being added. And then from our lovely fees review, we have another $395,000. So that's the $300,000 from the increase in the fees, and then about $95,000 in that subsidy model that we're doing for recreation for a total of $395,000. So our total net increase in revenues is $700,000, which is a sure improvement from last year. Last year, I think we had a deficit in revenue. This year, we actually have an increase of $700,000, which is largely contributed to the town doing that full fees review. So I like this chart. So I show you that the overall expenses and revenues. So we start off with our base of $75.7 million. Then we add, and I'm sorry, when it copies, it probably shows all those little arrows, but that's just my little pictures. So previously approved, there's the $385,000 that was approved into the base for 2016. Then we have the base increase for expenses of the $1.6 million that I spoke about earlier, which was mandatory costs, employee compensation, inflationary utilities, and then the reduction of service efficiencies. Then we see the additional revenue increase of $700,000. So at this point, our budget shortfall is about $1.3 million, or $2.5 million town only at this point. So this year, with the proposed unmet needs, there were several requests from all the different departments, and I think we've tried to give departments at least one in each area. However, we're trying to focus them into these main categories. So we're trying to make sure that each of the unmet needs are weighed into one of the different categories. So one is council work plan priorities, keeping our technology current, growth-related, which is one that's going to be year after year, I would think, and organizational excellence. So a similar approach to last year, what you'll see here is this is the first unmet need category, which is council work plan priorities. Anything in blue is a new FTE. Anything in red is a conversion position, a position that's either currently here at a part-time or full-time, and we want to just make it to a full-time permanent position instead of a contract position. In the December 1st presentations and December 15th, departments will go in more detail in each of these categories. There is also a summary in your blue binders on the back that says this is the summary of the funded and unfunded list. The unfunded list is not part of the presentation. It's part of your binders, and it's part of an appendix in the presentations for the public. Details on all the unmet needs are in there by department. White is obviously funded. Pink is unfunded. So in starting with this one focuses on the objectives into the council work plan. So there is only one position being recommended to be a conversion position. So moving from a contract position that's full-time to a permanent, and that is the incremental cost. The other things that are reflected here are just increases into the operating base. So we have marketing and advertising for $50,000 under economic development, community engagement for $20,000, students for communications. Those are not full-time FTEs, so this is the funding for three students in the communications and the benefits associated with that. The customer service administrative position is a conversion position. At this point, we're only recommending a part-time position on the administrator for adults over 55 program, and then the following year, once we have that position in and we address what we need in that position, then they can bring it forward in 2017 budget to say if they want that full-time. And then we're also recommending an increase to our grant assistance program right now for low-income seniors and low-income persons with disabilities. That increase is based on what the tax increase was from last year and how many applicants we get per year. The next category is keeping technology current. So this is looking at tools to help staff be more efficient and effective, advancements in the town's technology architecture. We're asking for one database person, so there's one there, and then also one person in DAP for planning policy or GIS. These are two new headcounts to add to the existing headcount of the town. The next category is growth. You'll see there's seven little blue people there. So there's seven new positions that are being recommended here. The first one under Fire and Emergency Services is for Chief Training Officer. This does not include a vehicle at this time. We've asked them to ask for the vehicle in 2017 as opposed to having it all in this year. Then there is a position for a law clerk under General Governance, a position under Human Resources for a Human Resources Associate, Parks Operator. This position requires a piece of equipment, a sidewalk plow as well. However, we're going to ask for that in 2017 budget. In 2016, we're only asking for some rental costs for the equipment at this point. And this is our way of trying to reduce the amount of requests coming in for 2016 and impact for 2016. Then to continue from Public Works from last year, they're trying to increase their operations. And so they're asking for two positions here for a level one operator and then another additional fleet service technician. So again, that's seven positions being added in this category. The next category is focusing on organizational excellence, which is to support attracting and retaining staff and also engagement of staff. We have one position in DAP that we need to convert. It's a contract position right now, but we have no dollars associated with it. So this is to convert that position. Then we have two positions that we're asking under human resources. What we've seen in the past is when people retire, there's no knowledge transfer because we don't have any approved headcount. This will allow that two headcount would sit under human resources. It would be funded through the operating contingency budget, and then if we needed to use it, we can use it when somebody retires to have two people on board, and then they can do that knowledge transfer. Under library services, they have four positions that are currently almost full-time, but they don't have the full-time status, so they have benefits and so on. So this is to convert four people. That cost is for just the incremental cost for the benefits and any other costs related to hiring them full-time. And then under DAP, we have another one for a law clerk, but this is a conversion position. We have dollars under part-time dollars under DAP and under planning law, and then we're also reducing some of our contracted legal services to keep this position at a zero cost. This way, they don't have to ask for any additional dollars. They're just asking to have the approved headcount. So on this slide, you're seeing that we have two new and then six conversion positions. So altogether, for the proposed 2016 unmet needs, we have a total of 18 new positions being requested, 11 new, 7 conversions at a cost of $1.1 million. The annualized cost is slightly less because you remove some of the one-time costs for computers and for furniture. However, there's several other positions that are under the pink section of the binders and on that summary sheet of $1.4 million. However, during the budget process, if council chooses to move one of the positions from unfunded to funded, they can. I know it would be better to take one from the funded list off to fund your one position that is unfunded, or if you want to add the unfunded position, that's increasing your tax rate. Or you can take one from the funded list completely off. So where we are now. So, and I don't mean to hammer this on, but I just want to make sure that we see how the numbers are changing from each section. We start off with the $75 million $75.7 million under expenses and revenue. Then you have the $385,000 that was from previously approved. Your increases to your base of 1.6, which again was the mandatory employee compensation, utilities, it was the inflationary, and then some offset for service efficiencies. The unmet needs, if you go with the ones that are recommended by our staff, is 1.1. Additional revenue of the $700,000 there. And then an allocation of assessment growth. As I said, it was $1 million. There's $500,000 being allocated to the operating. So overall, our budget shortfall at this point is $1.9 million, or 3.74 town only at this point. Okay. I wasn't sure if you wanted me to stop for questions. Questions or keep going?
Keep going.
So Heather Harrow will continue on the presentation for the 2016
proposed
capital.
Okay, if that's the case, then do you want to do the questions? No? Clerk says no. Okay. Blame the clerk.
Okay, for the proposed 2016 capital budget, let's first look at the proposed tax capital funding for 2016. This chart shows what our actual tax levy funded capital has been since 2008 to what is being proposed for the 2016 budget. The green line shows the town's target of $20 million, which is based on historical annual amortization amounts. The historical amortization amounts includes historical cost of assets, not the replacement costs. So in creating this target, we have taken that into consideration. Currently, there is still a $5.5 million gap between our target and the proposed tax-funded capital of $14.5 million. We hope to eliminate this gap in the next couple years to ensure we are prepared to replace and support the aging infrastructure and prepare for the anticipated growth in the future. This slide is showing how we are proposing to reach the goal we set of $20 million of annual tax levy capital funding by 2018, which was a resolution set by Council in the 2015 budget process. So as you can see, we are expecting to see further tax increases in 2017 and 2018 in order to reach this goal. If we are only looking at the town portion, there will be a 3.8% increase in property taxes a year for the next 2 years to reach this goal. There is an option to take the assessment growth that is allocated to capital funding and change the allocation so 100% of assessment growth is being put to the capital program to help lessen the impact on property taxes to reach this goal. We have left it the way that Council has approved in the past, which is a 50-50 split between operating and capital for the 2016 budget. This pie chart shows the overall proposed 2016 tax-funded capital by department. Public Works consumes approximately 55% of the capital budget, which is $8 million of the overall capital budget. With fire services coming next with 14%, which is approximately $2 million. This chart shows the sources of the capital budget funding for the proposed 2016 budget. 41% is coming from development charges to assist with funding part of the growth projects such as roads, libraries, and fire stations. 31% is coming from property taxes, and the majority of the remaining funding is coming from gas tax and recoveries from other municipalities, such as the Region of Peel. Debt consists of 9%, which is about $4.1 million. And that was for the enhanced road program. Fuing and Peggy have already touched on this, but once capital project was finished, the next year we issue the debt, which can be done internally or externally through the Region of Peel. The current budget does not take into account future debt repayments for debt being issued in previous years. So this will have to be added in once the debt is issued in future years. This slide shows a summary of some of the main capital projects each department is proposing to undertake in 2016. In your green capital binders, you will find a complete detailed listing of each project and the related funding, as well as a comprehensive summary listing of all proposed capital projects in the front of the capital binders. We've also provided the public copies of the budget binders on the website, and we have provided summaries in the council packages. I will highlight the main projects proposed to be funded for each department. Corporate services, capital projects consist of mainly IT-related projects and an insurance policy review. DAP consists of studies, such as the official plan review. Fire is asking for additional funding to complete the Bolton Fire Station. If these additional funds are not required, they are put back to the original source of funding. They are also proposing a fire training facility, and they have a business plan in the capital binders if you would like more information about that. General Governance has a customer service project and are proposing to make some website upgrades. The library is funding the Mayfield West Library, which is a term of council project, and they have their standard allocation of budget towards books and materials. Parks and Recreation has a term of council project for the Mayfield West Rec Center and are also performing renovations and replacements on many of their facilities. Public Works has many bridge and road projects as well as a fleet replacement and an LED project. A list of the roads to be completed in 2016 are included in your binders. The total of proposed unfunded tax levy capital was just under $6 million. You can find these details on the pink sheets in the capital binders. These were considered of a less urgent nature than the other capital projects that the town staff were proposing to fund. What council can do if they choose is to take any projects that are unfunded and turn them into funded projects, and they can also take any proposed funded projects and make them unfunded, realizing that the bottom line impact could affect the tax rate. So to summarize where we stand now with the 2016 proposed budget, we have the previously approved of $385,000 of unavoidable budget increases. We have the increase in expenses for 2016 of 1.6. We have the recommended unmet needs of $1.1 million. And we have the $1.5 million that is added to the base capital budget that is needed to get to the $20 million target in the next 3 years of tax capital funding. On the revenue side, we have the $700,000 of new revenue, and we have the split of the $1 million of assessment growth between operating and capital. The budget shortfall is currently right now $3 million, which equates to a 5.79% tax increase for the town's portion of property taxes. So that doesn't include the school board in the region. And I will now start on the 10-year capital projections. Every year, the town looks at the 10-year capital projections to determine the timing and costs of the different capital projects that will need to be completed. We categorize capital projects as either baseline projects or above baseline projects. Baseline projects are regular, recurring, and ongoing capital projects, such as road reconstruction. Above baseline capital projects are projects such as new facilities that are not covered in the baseline. We can adjust the baseline, which is tax levied capital funding, to accommodate these above baseline projects for projects such as the Mayfield Recreation Center. This chart shows what we are projecting as capital expenditures that will be occurring in the next 10 years and the related capital funding projections from tax to pay for these projects. The red line shows the capital expenditures projections, and the green line shows the capital funding from tax projected in the next 10 years based on assessment growth. As you can see, they are in line with each other until the latter years. At this point, there are many assumptions that come into play, and it's difficult to get the information due to the end of our DC background study. I just wanted to go over some of the major projects that staff are recommending we undertake in the next 10 years. In 2016, the major long-term projects are the Mayfield West Library and the Mayfield West Community Center, which equates to almost $33 million. A large portion of the funding for these projects will come from development charges, since these projects do relate to growth. The next major wave of capital projects are in 2019, and they're also related to growth projects, and they consist of the new fire station, an addition to the Caledon East complex, and a new public works operations center, which in total add up to about $32 million. This concludes the long-term capital section, and I will now hand the presentation back over to Peggy.
Still awake? Okay. Okay, so now I'm going to go through the annual debt repayment limit. You've seen this probably slide before. Our debt annual payment limit cannot exceed 25% as per the province standard. The town's rate or policy is 10%. Based on 2015's annual repayment limit, we were at 4.65. So in this chart, you'll see the 4.65 reflected on that first column there, which includes the Caledon Hydro external debt, includes non-material leases, the fire aerial debt. It also includes the BAR, the Bolton Arterial Route. That's getting uploaded to the region this year completely, but in this point, we still had it in our statement. The chart on the side there, which is the updated version, will include other internal debt. So the fleet debenture and the trackless units were internal debt projects, and those are reflected in that chart to show us that our annual repayment limit gets up to 5.8%. This next slide shows the ARL limit projected out to 2023. You can see the additional debt from the Road Enhancement Program and from the Caledon Equestrian Park in 2016. And then you can see how the additional $4.1 million of road enhancements, how that affects your debt repayment limit. In 2020, you'll see it go down to 3.66, and that's because we are done our payments for the Caledon Hydro external debt. So this will take us now to the end of the budget process. So this will take us to the following slides. So $1.3 million is our increase to the base. So that $1.3 is everything that we talked about already. So it's the unavoidable budget increases, it is the increase to expenses, less the revenue. So that's the increase to the 2016 operating base is 1.3. The proposed unmet needs is 1.1 if we go with the recommended list. The increase to the capital base is almost 1.6 million. You deduct the assessment growth, and again, this number is not going to change. It's going to be 1 million, and I'm not changing it from now to the end. It's been 1 million. That's not much as we are having for assessment growth. Then our total budget request at this point is just over $3 million, which is 5.8, or each 1% is $522,000 approximately. So this next slide shows the estimated impact for the proposed budget. And what this is going to show you is the estimated impact, including all factors in. So the town with the 5.8, that equates to impact the tax resident at 2.5. Then you add in what we wanted to do was add the stormwater levy. And our proposal for the stormwater levy at 1%, the impact actually and the blended rate is 0.4. For broadband, we've talked about broadband before. We want to add that 0.6 of a levy or 300,000. That impact to the overall tax rate in the blended or overall rate is 0.2. The region is estimated to be at 2%. However, how that equates to Caledon is 0.7. And again, we're assuming school board's at zero, but we won't know that, of course, until like April. So at this point, we have to assume zero. So then our proposed 2016 budget is at 3.8 all in. That impact for the average property assessment at 519 is $136 per year, or for every 100,000 is approximately $26. That concludes my presentation.
Okay, thank you. So I don't know who's going to add what question, but we'll figure this out as we go. Councillor Groves.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. So I just want to ask, the 3.8% is capital and operating?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, that is correct. It includes everything in.
Right. Okay. So on slides 37 to 39, where we're talking about some of the projects to be funded, do we know what portions of the projects would be?
So 27,
funded?
Sorry, I gotta get to there. Sorry, 37.
Yeah, okay. 37. So they start on 37.
Okay.
So I guess I am assuming that whatever the total budget is, whatever is not funded through the tax levy is funded through development charges?
Not necessarily. Through Mayor Thompson, so just to make sure we're all understanding the same page. In the green binders provided to you on the very front is a large paper that's about 11 by 17. It'll have a list of all these projects, not just these ones, but everything for each department. It'll show all the different funding sources. So I don't want to assume it's just development charges because it could be multiple funding sources. So here it actually shows the split of all different funding sources, not necessarily all DC, because we're using reserves, we're using development charges, we're using gas tax, we're using the aggregate levy, we're using debt, and then we also have some projects that are pending grant approvals that are in there as well. So it's a wide range.
Okay, good. With the gas tax funding, is there any opportunity to increase that? That comes from the federal government. Do we have any opportunity to, or does that remain sort of the same?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, we basically have the projections that we receive from the province or the federal government for that. And we've actually allocated more in gas tax this year simply because some of the projects last year completed under budget. Mm-hmm. That money goes back in the reserve because our normal allocation for gas tax is just over $3 million. Okay. And we're using 4.1 in this budget.
Okay, good. When I was looking at your slides, looking at the residential versus ICI, I know it sort of stayed the same. Then it increased slightly between 2022 and 2024 by a percent in terms of the ICI, and then it goes back, it drops back to 19%. So I guess the question is, how did you arrive at that? Because I know in the growth plan, you're required to have a certain amount of land budget for industrial commercial, and I would think moving forward, we would be increasing.
Senior Mayor Thompson, so this is the incremental increase in property tax revenue from assessment growth. So we work with building and with DAP and actually go through all their projections for all their different subdivisions. In each subdivision, how much is commercial, how much is industrial. Then we take all their information and then we project out 3 years when that assessment growth is going to come in. We have averages of how much we use for residential property, for semi, for each of the different types, and then for industrial and commercial. We use all those projections and project out all those years of how much incremental additional revenue we'll get from assessment growth. These are all projections, and yes, it could sway each year, but we're roughly 82 to 18%. It could change in a given year if we have more commercial industrial, but it's really hard to bring that commercial industrial. You would need a lot more commercial industrial to really bring that up. Because you're right now, even what we've seen in this year, is majority of it's attributed to residential.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it should be incumbent on us to sort of move into a very aggressive approach in the industrial commercial sector.
To bring that non-residential more?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Sure. Okay. The other question I have, I know the new federal government talked about infrastructure, and one of their focus is to fund infrastructure. Do we have somebody? Do we have anybody who would be working closely to monitor that to see how we can access any type of funding for infrastructure? And I'm not sure when the government says infrastructure, I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know what exactly it is that they're looking at. Do we know anything?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, we applied for two road projects. One we received that we denied funding. One that we're waiting for pending funding, which is in the budget binders right now. I believe it's Columbia Way. Mm-hmm. So under the capital budget, under public works, you'll see two projects for Columbia Way. One is for environment and design, which we need to do regardless. And the other project is pending grant if we get it. So we try to take every opportunity to apply for grants when we can. However, sometimes we're not very successful in getting that funding.
Right. And finally, all of these projects that you've listed here, these are the funded projects. And in here would be the pink sheets, right?
So in the green one, you'll see the white ones are all the funded ones. Anything pink? It's just my favorite.
But on here.
It's unfunded. Pink is not reflecting the presentation, correct? Because it would just be too much on a slide. So there are extra attachments to the presentations for the public. And then for you, it's in the front part of your binders. You'll see on the summary. There's a big sheet here, and then also the pink one.
Right. So anything in here
is funded.
Is the funded.
Correct.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Groves. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks.
Everybody's hungry, you know.
No pressure.
Yeah. And what's your point? I think it's important because a lot of the residents will look at this presentation. And one of the things that really jumped out when you looked at it, and your explanation covered it off, and that is, for example, the net budget impact for example, parks operator. And that's slide 28. And you said, well, there's equipment associated with it. Somewhere there has to be a reference, or there should probably be a reference with these numbers and what's included with them. So you either reference back to the white sheet, probably, and that's where it would show up, right?
Through Mayor Thompson, yes. The white sheet's in each department's package in the binder. There is information on the details of each position. It'll say why they're asking for the position, more, and the costs associated with each position. Those binders have been all PDF and put on the website as well. In the departmental presentation on December 1st and 15th, the directors, when they present their budgets, should explain in more detail each of those positions. The purpose of this presentation is just to give you a high-level review. And sometimes one of the questions that are always asked is, that's a lot of money. Is that included vehicle or not? So that's why I tried to address it.
Well, and I think that if you had a reference to it, because some people are just going to see this. I think this is going to show up again somewhere down the road in one of the community presentations. And I think there's got to be some sort of explanation because you sit here and you look at it. Now, I imagine, for example, the training officer come with probably a full pumper unit and something else, right? So that's why that's to that dollar. And I think it just makes it easier for residents to kind of understand where you're at.
Well, and Councillor DeBoer, I'm going to jump in here too. If you look at the C, it says C, growth related. This is the cost of growth that we're assuming. And people need to know that with all the growth that we got coming, this is the reality.
Yeah, it's the reality, and that's the part of it. Now, you had made the comment, where was it? Assessment growth. You're allocating, there was $1 million you said you were going to leave in the capital part of it. So are you predicting then there was $1 million or $2 million worth of total assessment growth, 50-50 split?
No, it's through you, Mayor Thompson. It's $1 million altogether.
Half and half.
Half, 50% going to operating, 50% to capital. So if you see from this graph, there's the $1 million. The green is going to capital and the red is going to operating. So it's 500 for each section.
Okay, so right now it's 500. Each way?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Chart 39 shows it better, Councillor DeBoer.
Actually, it shows us $1 million. It didn't. I was going to clarify as to whether it was a split
chart
that way.
Chart 39, you'll see half and half.
Okay, that's fine. I'll ask the questions later when you're...
He's hungry. Better not stop.
Councillor Befford?
Yes, thank you. Just going back to the infrastructure money for a moment, I don't know if anyone else heard it during the election, but at one of the debates, when the infrastructure money came up, the Prime Minister-to-be suggested that they were going to create the Bank of Infrastructure, and they were actually going to loan municipalities money at a preferred rate. I heard that distinctly, so I'm going to be very cautious about what they're going to give out. Looks like loans instead of, but anyway, we'll see what happens. Peggy, slide 46, please. ARL assumptions. I don't see the $1.4 million with respect to the roads. Should that be listed on one of the...
So the 4.1?
4.1, sorry.
So that would be in 2016.
Okay.
So 2016, it actually shows it better on this one. You can see the ARL going up from the 5.8 to 6.87. That's where it's reflected.
Okay, thank you. Slide 43, having to do with the proposed funding of major projects. Now, so am I correct in saying that only the top two, the Mayfield West Community Center and the library, will be included in the 2016 budget? The others are just projections?
Okay. So through you, Mayor Thompson, those two projects are term of council, so they're already in there.
Okay.
These ones were just other ones that are in the 10-year. A full list of the 10-year is available on the back part of your green binders.
But not necessarily included in the budget at this point?
Correct.
Okay. And I'd like to go back to slide 38, if I could, please. 34. It was suggested that there was an option here, and I think it has to do with the $500,000 capital. Can you explain what that option is and what it would mean to the baseline of the 5.79%?
So through you, Mayor Thompson, it wouldn't make much change for 2016 because really the assessment growth gets allocated to capital and operating, but it's, we look at the overall number, it's still not the same. It's how much you want to add to your increase your base for your capital.
Right.
So for 2017 and 18, what we're saying here is we have a rule of how much we put to capital, how much we put to operating. This is only doing that allocation rule, and it's adding 811 for 2017 and then the 728 in 2018. In a given year, we look at that rule, we could allocate more to our base capital, leaving less to fund for operating, but that's a choice we can make here. At this point, we're just applying the rule going forward.
So we can consider changing that rule if we wish?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Councilor McClure.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just looking at the bottom line here. I think everybody looks at the bottom line. Everybody's a taxpayer. The landowners, business owners, they're going to look at this, and they're going to tell us without even me thinking about it, how come it's going up 3, 4, 5% every year? We should sharpen our pencil and put it up 1%. Maybe nothing. Shock the devil out of them. This is our job. Whether we have less staff, whether we have less luxuries, I think we should rip all this thing up and go through it again. This is too much. That's my thought.
Okay. Councilor Mizzipelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Just chronologically going through the presentation, you talked about the different format this year, Peggy, where we're going to have an informal open house and then a more formal PIM in council chambers. I just wanted to make sure for the public's knowledge, and a component of that, like a typical PIM, will be formally for the public to speak as a part of the PIM portion.
Correct. So this presentation that I did for you today, that'll be the same one that I'll be doing that night. But it will be done after the open house portion, and certainly they can ask questions there. We wanted to make sure they had an opportunity to ask questions beforehand too, because sometimes that would alleviate a lot of the questions and then also give an opportunity to ask one-on-one as opposed to just in a general audience too.
Okay, thank you. Bear with me. Some of the positions on the operating side, and I'm sure there's a simple answer to this, but the development approval and planning policy section typically has their staff funded from fees. I did note that there were some development approval and planning policy staff that had a figure attached to their positions. Can you just explain why that is?
So through you, Mayor Thompson, that was when building was part of DAP. Building is no longer part of DAP. So, and building department is not asking for any new headcount for 2016. DAP has to fund their positions just like everybody else. So they are asking for one position and for GIS, and then one position for a law clerk. That's a conversion, which is just being offset by casual labor. So they have casual labor that they're not using for students or what have you. They have a contract person as well for casual labor. And then they're also reducing in another area for contracted services to bring that $0 for that position. So leave in DAP, they have, and they have a third as well. They have also another conversion position as well for a full-time headcount. So they all have a tax impact except for the one that's reducing part-time wages for the position to come in full-time.
Okay. Slide 34, I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. This basically expresses, and I was supportive of this during the last budget, the initiative to basically get to that 20 million tax-funded capital program by the end of this term.
Correct.
And it kind of lays out how we can get there. And when I look at it, the particularly the line where it's the increase to the base capital, which is basically the top-up to step us along the way to that 20 million mark. And 2016, which is being proposed this year, is $1 million, and then it jumps to almost 2 million mm-hmm. for the next 2 years. And I will reiterate, I am fully supportive of moving in that direction, and I don't know that it'll be as evident this budget, but next budget, even when you take into consideration and you have the assessment that you're going to apply to this, which I'm assuming is 50% again, mm-hmm. It doubles the top-up that's required. And then the following year, another 2 million. I think that's going to be challenging. And I think something this council is going to have to consider is it more important to head towards that goal or to absolutely meet it by a certain date? And we've got to balance that and find something that works not only for staff's perspective and your budgets, but also for the residents and businesses that have to fund this, largely from the taxes. The other question I had was with respect to the very slide 43, which Councillor Brefford talked to, with basically timelines for budgeting things. And I note that I made this comment last budget, and I'll make it again this year, because I see the trend being that we are going to, as we grow, require more staff. And there's 11 new and 7 conversions, and I don't know whether they actually have a physical place here or not. I imagine some may not. But if we extrapolate that over a number of years, you know, so 18 people, and I'm guessing by 2026, the expansion of this building will be funded, and at some point thereafter, the expansion will actually physically occur. I'm assuming we've gone through the exercise of saying, when will this building physically be maxed out? And I look at that and see that's at least 10 years away. And I'm hopeful that we are making sure that we make sure we have a facility that will accommodate the staff that we're going to need to service our residents and businesses. I don't know if there's a comment you want to make on that, but it's an observation I make. I know we do a lot of restructuring and moving of staff around. I don't see tons of space, so I'm just want to make sure that we have the facility and time for the people to house them as they do the work that we need for the community. I believe that is it at this point for myself. Thank you. Very well done.
Thank you.
Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'll just keep mine really simple because I know I'm going to get asked, and I know how much you love doing comparisons. I'm going to be asked, okay, taxes for us, how does that compare to another municipality that is similar to us? They're going to complain that their taxes have gone up and, oh, we pay too much taxes or so I think being able to see it in relationship to a municipality that may be similar to us, which means similar not in just in composition of land mass, but composition of who's facing growth, who isn't rural, that combination, which I know is really hard to find. But I think I know I'm going to get asked it, and I'd love to have an answer for that. And then on your presentation, and I'll just simply take slides 22 and 23, you had to, each time you talked about them, you had to explain what they actually mean. And if you have to explain it numerous times, you're going to have to explain it numerous times on the open house. I'd prefer to see the three or four different items that are actually make up that number to actually be written on that slide so you don't have to keep repeating yourself. I'm just trying to think of keeping it really simple, not just for us, but for the public too. So that would be also awesome to have that done for that open house. And now, just because I have a conflict that night, because I have a difficult time getting these conservation authorities to think about us when they're arranging their days and times for their meetings, you said 7 o'clock. Is 7 o'clock going to be the open house part, and then at 8 o'clock come into chambers, or do we even know at this point?
Ms. Tollett.
Through you, Mayor Thompson, I believe 7 o'clock is when we wanted to start the open house part,
It depends on how many questions, but ideally I would like to get into chambers, yes, around 8, but it depends on how many questions, or I mean, people are here too.
Okay. That's great, because I'm going to have to run from one to another, and I'm just trying to balance my time effectively. Mm-hmm. So that's great. Thanks. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Ms. Tollett, I got to tell you, all your team and everybody's put together a reality check, and I got to say, I think, and I got to tell you, the binders are extremely well done. It's very explanatory. This is the best yet that I've seen in all my career here as a counselor and now as a mayor. I got to say, the binders are very well done. You've done an excellent job. And I do have a solution for Councillor McClure for your zero tax increase. If we take everything out of Mayfield West this year, we can make it work. Okay. Meeting, everybody. Councillor Mizzapelli, seconded by Councillor Shaughnessy. All in favor? Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for the input, and thank you for all.